Tuesday, March the 12th, 2019. We are at the Veterans Memorial Hall, starting at 5:30. 5:30 tonight is our first meeting for 5:30, 209 Sur Street, Morro Bay, California. We do have a quorum. I will call the meeting to order and ask for a moment of silence, please. Thank you. And Chief Cox, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With that, I will ask our city attorney, do we have any closed session items to report on?
No reportable action.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. And I'll move to council member reports. Start to my right. Anything, council member Heller? Council member McPherson?
Well, I don't have any reports, but I have some announcements. First of all, there's a couple of events coming up this coming weekend. The first one is the 30th Annual Dixon Spaghetti Fundraiser. That's Friday, March 15th, 5 to 7:30 at the Community Center. $12 for adults. Children under 12 are 7. And it benefits, of course, the Community Foundation and their scholarship fund for helping young people to attend recreational programs. Then on Sunday, St. Patty's Day, the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance, which, as I have reminded you many times, is raising money to pay the city back for purchasing Cerrito Peak, also known as Eagle Rock. And in the parking lot of Three Stacks and a Rock, the brewing company is going to be hosting from 12 to 6. There's music, beer, raffle prizes, and they are donating $2 from every one of their new beer, Eagle Rock, to the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance. And then finally, I don't know if you noticed in the paper, there was an article about C-SPAN that was in our community last weekend. They were at the Coalesce bookstore, and then they were in San Luis Obispo the following day, and they were filming. It'll be on television in April. The segment that deals with literary history, which features the Coalesce bookstore, will be featured on Books TV April 6th at 9 o'clock a.m., C-SPAN 2. And then the segment on the city of San Luis Obispo, that's the city's tour program, an overview of the city's history, will air on Sunday, April 7th at 11 a.m. on the American History TV, C-SPAN 3. So those are my announcements.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Addis.
I just wanted to thank the Del Mar students for coming out again this evening to public comment, and also to the folks that came to the goal-setting meeting on March 1st. It was wonderful to hear your input and to continue receiving your input. So you're welcome to still email me at daddis@morrobayca.gov if you have more input on what the direction of Morro Bay should be.
Great. Thank you so much. And we will have a formal report at the next meeting regarding our trip to Washington, D.C. Just in brief, last week, about six of us attended about 32 sessions with congressional leaders as well as various agencies within the government. And we are preparing a formal report to present to you at the next meeting. So I just wanted to make that announcement. As well, just a reminder, tonight is the first night that we are starting at 5:30 p.m. So those of you in TV land that haven't tuned in yet, you missed the first half of the meeting. So sorry about that. But we will be beginning from here on out at 5:30 p.m. at the Vets Hall. Thank you. Mr. City Manager. Come on up here. Testing 1, 2, 3. Well, guess what?
There we go. All right, here we go. Back in action. Thank you, Mayor, Council members. I appreciate the opportunity to give a little update here. Councilmember Addis referred to the March 1st goals session. We will be having a follow-up to that on pending, but looking at April 9th, the City Council meeting at 5:30 p.m. for the next goals session. We will be putting new questions out on our online engagement site. It's at polco.us/Morro Bay. Polco, that's polco.us/Morro Bay. We'll be putting new questions out on Thursday. And if you haven't signed up on that website, you just go to the website I mentioned and click sign up and just have to provide a little bit of information. That way you'll be in the queue for any new questions that come forward. Really good session, a lot of discussion about goals and then action items and how to make that all coalesce in a two-year work plan. In addition, I wanted to provide the opportunity for our fire chief to announce two new promotions in the fire department.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council, and thank you, Scott. We promoted two individuals. That we had six engineers in-house test, multiple day test that included scenario-based testing, a written third-party test, in-basket exercise, a community board, and a peer review board. And I'd like to announce that Engineer Scott Subler and Engineer Travis Hosh are going to be promoted. They're moving to their shifts first part of April, and I think April 6th is the day when they first become paramedics. A little bit about Captain Scott Subler. He joined the Morro Bay Fire Department in 1989. He is a Cal Poly graduate. He raised his family here in Morro Bay. Both his kids graduated from Morro Bay High School. One went to Harvey Mudd, his daughter, and now she's a general engineer up in the Bay Area. And his son, Sam, is currently working locally here in Morro Bay. Scott became a paramedic in 2002, did his internship down in Roy Grande, did his clinical time down in Roy Grande Hospital, and did his internship up in Paso Robles. Travis Hosh, Captain Travis Hosh, is a local high school graduate from Atascadero High School. He also went to Cal Poly, a forestry management major out of Cal Poly. He started his fire service career in Atascadero in 2003. And he was became a paramedic in 2009, and he was hired by us in 2011. He did his internship at Twin Cities Hospital and also in Atascadero in San Luis Obispo, and he was promoted to engineer in 2012. I'm really excited about these two gentlemen. I was first looking for leaders, and these two gentlemen are going to be leaders, and they're really super excited about the tradition of the Morro Bay Fire Department and the work we do. So congratulations to Scott and Travis.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that very much. Yeah, I was going to say you had two, but go ahead.
We on April 17th, we're having a badge pinning at the fire station at 9 o'clock. The public is invited. This is an opportunity for both Scott's and Travis's family to enjoy their promotion and a tradition that we have at the fire department.
What time was that again?
That'll be at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Thank you. Okay, we'll move to our business spot. I want to welcome up Matt Fines from Dealer's Choice. Matt, welcome. Great to have you here. And looking forward to hear about your new business.
Allowed us to come into your beautiful city.
And if you wouldn't mind in the mic, that would be great. Press the button. Should turn green. And on the mic, yeah. Scott, you want to? Assist, thank you.
Okay. Oh, no.
There you go.
Okay. So, first of all, we'd like to thank everybody for letting us into your beautiful city. And just a little background on Dealer's Choice. We've been open since 1983. I sold my first car when I was 11, and I fell in love with it. I absolutely love helping people find the car of their dreams or even maybe just the car of their transportation needs. So that being said, we have two other locations that are in the valley. None of them as gorgeous as this one, of course. And Daniel's the lucky one. I'll let him speak for just a second that gets to run this beautiful location. We'd love to help you and just like to see everybody out. Thank you.
And once again, guys, thanks for having us into your community. And we look forward to being part of the community in the Valley. We contribute to the local sporting events and anything we can do to help out into the community. So anybody that has any needs, we welcome you guys to reach out and help, you know, ask for the help from us as a business. And once again, anything we can do to make the community work together and build good business.
And for our audience, your location?
1598 Main Street, right in the old Morro Bay RV and Marine.
And your hours of operation?
10 to 6 every day except Sunday.
Okay. And website?
805deal.com.
Hey, that's pretty easy. 805deal.com.
Shorter the better.
And last but not least, your phone number?
805-617-0099.
You passed the test. I have your card here, so it's perfect.
Thank you, John.
Hey, welcome to the community, gentlemen.
Thank
really
you,
glad
Thank
to
you
have you
much.
Here. Appreciate you. With that, I'll move to public comment, and it's great to have our young people back from Del Mar Elementary School. I'm really excited about young people getting involved in government. And so you guys want to come up together? Okay, you can come up together. I have first Molly Lang is going to speak to us. Welcome, Molly.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Emma Whiteson, and I am the Student Council President at Del Mar Elementary. Go Dolphins! We would like to share with our community the exciting things we have going on at Del Mar. Our fifth grade class will be going to camp here in our very own community. With the help of our school, parents, and volunteers, we will be able to spend time in our very own backyard learning about science and nature. We will be going on the last week of March. One of the ways we will be earning funds for camps will be the rummage sale we are having on March 23rd and 24th at the school. Please spread the word and come find some treasures you didn't know you needed.
Great. Thank you. That was, by the way, that was Emma Sunshine Whiteson. So, Emma, thank you for that. That's always a fun time. On the 23rd, you said, right? And the 24th, we'll be there. And then is Molly... Molly, are you going to... Hi, Molly. Welcome. Molly Lang.
Good evening.
There you go.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Molly, and I will be sharing information about Spirit Day. We will be having our next Spirit Day on March 22nd. Our theme is Beach Day. We will be having volleyball and a photo booth during lunch. The school can wear beach outfits. We will have fun.
Great. That sounds like a fun day, too. I'm going to get Council Member Addison McPherson to go to that with me, and probably Council Member Heller, too. And then I have Isabella Ketchum. Isabella, welcome.
Hi, my name is Isabella, and I would like to share with you our recycling program at Del Mar. We encourage students and their families to bring in their recycling and cans and bottles, plastic bottles, and a volunteer takes it to the recycling center, and all funds go back to our school. It teaches to take care of our community. If you would like more information, you can contact the school. Thank you for listening to all of our speeches, and I hope you guys all have a good night.
Great. Thank you, guys. You did a great job, by the way. That's Emma. Emma, Molly, and Isabella, thank you. And thank you... Sandy Potter, fifth grade teacher at Del Mar, for arranging this. We really appreciate you doing that. Kids, it's really important to be involved in city government, and you're taking a lead in that. And we're really glad as a city council that you came forward. Be sure to watch yourselves on TV, Channel 20, okay? All right. With that, a general public comment is open. I'll go with speaker slips. No need to fill out a speaker slip if you don't want to. It does make it easier here to call you up. If you would like your comments noted by name in the minutes, please include your name. But again, it's not necessary to either give your name or fill out a speaker slip. So I'm only going to say it once this time as opposed to every time. So with that, I'm going to welcome up Barbara Wolak. Barbara, welcome.
Good evening. I'm Barbara Wolak, and this is Rich Robb. We are both active members of the Seniors Pickleball. Our president, Susan Craig, and our vice president, Donna Shaw, unfortunately are out of town, so we're filling in for them. But we'd like to leave you with a formalized fundraising proposal of how to raise $100,000 for more pickleball courts. We need your help in locating the correct position or location at Del Mar Park. We have considered several, but again, we're asking for your help because we don't want to infringe on any other active people. But our fundraising would be similar to that at the Maritime Museum down on the Embarcadero, selling engraved bricks. And that would allow us to raise our $100,000. Our first choice would be the tennis courts, because we have noticed over the past 2 years since we've been there that they are rarely used. And tennis people, once they try pickleball, are fixed on it just like we are. So we're hoping to pull them along. We're thinking the bricks, if they were laid along the north side of the current pickleball courts, would allow dog owners that walk their dogs there to engrave a brick, possibly even with their dog's name on it. So again, our vision is for everyone ages 8 to 88 to enjoy Del Mar Park more than to just see open tennis courts. We can fit 3 pickleball courts on 1 tennis court. So we can have 12 players out there versus 2. So even the odds are overwhelmingly better. And pickleball is easier to play at 8 than tennis. And it's even. We have an 88-year-old that plays there daily. And I haven't seen an 88-year-old playing tennis lately. So again, I'd like to thank you for your time. I'd like to leave you with this. And if possible, if we can get on next council meeting's agenda after you have a chance to look at this. Do you have anything to say?
Just that as I've been
could you step to the mic?
I've been playing pickleball about 3 years. I've played basketball and baseball and all that other stuff, and I enjoy all of them. But the pickleball around here in this town has really blossomed. It started out with the 4 temporary courts, and now we have 4 permanent courts and 2 temporary courts. But when you're playing, and the time, it used to be you'd get there at 9 o'clock and play till noon, or, oh, my time's up.
Well, there were 2 of you. That's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And you would play till noon, and the courts would get empty. But now, 3 years later, you can pretty much go there any time of the day and find a game. That it is expanded to that amount. And there's always, especially from in the morning session from 9 to noon, it has expanded so that there are people, 4 to 6 people waiting on each court throughout that 3-hour period. So it would be really helpful to have more courts available. And, you know, the first choice is the tennis courts because we see they are not used. I understand there's a bond issue there, but we do have other suggestions. And what we really want is just the opportunity to raise the funds so it wouldn't cost you anything other than an okay to work in the parks or whatever. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you.
Who do I leave these with?
With our clerk right here. Thank you. This is general public comment for items not on the agenda. Just give us a wave if you would. Or items on the agenda if you can't stay for that item when it does come up. Next up is Meredith Bates. Welcome, Meredith. And I'll just have Rigmore, you'll be next, so you might want to just be ready.
Hi, good evening, Council and Mayor and staff. Meredith Bates, Morro Bay resident. I can't stay for the item that I want to talk about, so I'm going to talk about it now. I want to speak in support of the warming shelter and the grant that hopefully you're going to be approving this evening. We have a warming shelter in Los Osos that has been fabulous. I really get concerned about those homeless folks in Morro Bay and Los Osos when it's raining or when it's really cold. And the Los Osos shelter will open if it's 34 degrees or below or if it's raining. And they've worked out a really good program that has been quite successful to help those who have no shelter. And so there's other models in the county that we can follow. I think the grant would be a great way to start so we could fix up the vets hall here. And people that don't have shelter would have a place to go when it's raining or it's really cold. It's just a humanitarian kind of a gesture that I think this community has been so kind to people, and we're known for being very giving. So I think this would be an excellent way to help those folks in our community that are homeless. Thank you.
Thank you, Meredith. Next up is Rigmore. Welcome, Rigmore. And next up after that is Joe Gazzardi.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council, and staff. My name is Rigmore Morro Bay. I imagine you're sick and tired of seeing me here, but this is my monthly therapy minutes. I'm again going to gnaw on the Sur Street stairs, but with a different suggestion this time. I listened to the last Planning Commission meeting and understand that the city might give away 2 feet of property on Main and Morro Bay Boulevard, which, if one multiply length and height, culminates into some square feet of gift. So, I was wondering if a few square feet where the Sur Street stairs was could be given, like just a strip down the hill there, could be gifted to me or someone else who would be willing to get volunteers and maybe some money here and there, maybe sell some bricks, to either build a nice trail or some new exercise stairs. Of course, to also pay the property tax and liability insurance and have the access for public use. I do not think it would be difficult to avoid the ADA issue, which creates the biggest expense. My agenda is not altogether for my own benefit. I can barely walk very far, got injured from stupid ski jumping as a teenager, and have spent most of my life on crutches, although I have used the stairs, hobbling down to the dockside getting my barbecue abalone once in a while. And how much more pleasant that was instead of struggling down Beach Street in all the noise and traffic when I went to get my abalone yesterday. I also realize, like all the other property owners around here, that it severely lowered their property values, losing their front yard stairs leading to the ocean. But the big issue for me is how you hurt the uniqueness, history, open space, interesting way down to the Embarcadero for all residents, visitors, kids, firemen, etc. I know that with the price you quote to build them back, it will never happen, and that is a big shame. It will be just like the Surf Street view deck you promised in the 1980s, just excuses. Although I do support a 1% sales tax increase, and maybe we will take in millions and millions and we could build some new stairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Rigmore. Next up is Joe Gazzardi. Welcome, Joe, and then Nicole Dorfman after that. Nicole, after that.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. I am Joe Gazzardi. I'm the new Emergency Services Manager for the County Office of Emergency Services. County Administrator asked me to go around to the cities and introduce myself, so that's why I'm here. Just to give you a little background, I started right after the first of the year, so I've been on job for about 8 weeks, something like that. A little background, I spent the last 3.5 years up in Santa Clara County working for the OES office up there. And then prior to that, I was in Santa Barbara County for 27 years. 17 of that was with the OES office in Santa Barbara, and then 10 years as a health officer. Kind of changed gears after a while. Anyway, happy to be here. I'm a graduate of Cal Poly, like a lot of folks around here, also in the forestry program. I won't tell you what year that was, but I'll just say that the nuclear power plant was still being built when I was at Cal Poly. And as you know, speaking of the power plant, they're planning on shutting it down in about 5 years. Part of my charge is to sort of shepherd that process. And in conjunction with that, start having our office pay attention to more all-risk emergency management issues. I know having worked in Santa Barbara County, being next door to this county, we always noticed that the folks at SLO OES were sort of obsessed with the power plant, which is okay, because it is a big deal and we do need to monitor what they do and be prepared to react if anything goes south over there. But also what we're trying to do in the coming years is pay attention to all risk: earthquakes, fires, floods. The other thing that I've been asked to do is try to work as closely as possible with the cities. Part of my job, if you don't know, The San Luis Obispo operational area is also beholden to the cities within the county and the special districts. So part of my job is to assist you and to assist your staff in preparing for and planning for emergencies. And then if we do have to respond, we become partners to do that. So what I'll be doing in the coming years is working closely with the seven cities to try to plan and prepare for emergencies. So I know a lot of the cities, this is sort of new territory, but I've been doing it for about 20 years, so I think I can bring you a lot of benefit in that effort. That's about it. That's my introduction. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you had any. Otherwise, I'm looking forward to, I think I have a meeting with the fire chief coming up real soon, I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Well, Joe, welcome. Good to have you as part of or back in the county,
yeah.
And I'm sure we'll be in contact soon, getting to know one another and find out what's going on with you. So
all
appreciate
right.
that. Thanks for coming out tonight.
Anytime. Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Next up is Nicole Dorfman, and after Nicole, I have Maggie Jurin.
Hello, welcome. Mayor and Council. Thank you for being here and for hearing all of us out. I'm here to comment on item C1, but I do want to make just a very brief aside to support what Meredith Bates said earlier, that I also am in support of a warming shelter. So I appreciate Meredith speaking to that. My name is Nicole Dorfman. I'm here to comment on item C1. I want to voice my support for the Central Coast Aquarium project on the Embarcadero. My husband and I did donate to the feasibility study, as we believe a new aquarium will benefit Morro Bay in various ways. The proposed aquarium has the potential to give Morro Bay the economic boost it desperately needs without sacrificing the character of our city or the quality of our environment. It will provide good jobs for Morro Bay residents and increased revenues for hotels, restaurants, and a variety of other local businesses. Here are just a couple of numbers that I found in a quick internet search about aquariums and economic benefits. According to a report by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, accredited zoos and aquariums contributed more than $22.5 billion to the U.S. economy in 2016 and served more than 195 million visitors annually, including 50 million children. A 2012 report on the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach put its economic impact at $57 million annually. As a resident of Morro Bay, I am excited by the opportunity to capture some of that money for ourselves. And I encourage the City Council to continue forward in partnership with the Central Coast Aquarium and Cal Poly in pursuing a new aquarium project in Morro Bay within the proposed one-year timeline. Thank you for your consideration of this
Thank
project.
Thank you, Nicole. Very much appreciated. Next up is Maggie Jurin. Welcome, Maggie. And after that, Sophia Toll. If I'm wrong, I apologize, but Sophia. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Maggie Jurin. My husband and our partner, Robert Elzer, own two vacation rental property management companies in the area, and we manage over 50 homes. doing that, and I just recently served on the TBID board. And unfortunately, I have to leave tonight for another commitment, but I, too, am here to support the aquarium. I think it would be a wonderful, wonderful thing for our city. I've been a strong proponent of the way you attract people to your city is having things for them to do, for children to do, for families to do together. I see an aquarium as being something that would bring back repeat guests. Each time we have a lot of returning guests, as you know, people love Morro Bay and come back on a yearly basis, and yet I see them coming every time to see what's new. I also love the concept that I read that it's not going to have mammals included, but be a touching aquarium. I just feel like it's a very strong thing for our city, and we're trying desperately to bring up the tourism dollars and protect and bring more people to our city, and I think this would be a great addition. So I encourage the board to continue working with the CCA, and I hope you pass it. And even if it requires some financial commitment on our city, I think it would be dollars well spent. Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie. Next up is Sophia Toll. And if I mess that up, correct me, please. Welcome, Sophia. After that, Bill Martoni.
Good evening. My name is Sophia Tolley. I'm a resident of Atascadero, but I own Poppy Boutique on Embarcadero. I have two small comments. One of them is about the fireworks. 4th of July is one of the biggest holidays for us, and after this hard winter that we have, we were looking forward to have a great summer and 4th of July fall into that business. So my question is, what's the stand of Morro Bay on the fireworks? Because a couple years ago, we were able to raise the money, but then we had the firework did not happen because we had two versions that Morro Bay did not support the idea, and it's not kind of doesn't want to go in that direction, having fireworks, and the other story was that we were late on paperwork. So if the city is supporting the fireworks, then we would love to get that started now, and maybe we're able to raise the money again. And if the city is not supporting that idea, we would like to know, maybe next year we could plan something else for 4th of July. It's from a business point, it's very important for us. It's we are in a tourist area. We always compete with all the other cities around us. I had the business for 3 years, and the last couple of years I had to close early on 4th of July because everyone going between Bismo and Cayucos. So we own a restaurant also that we don't own anymore, and these two nights was also almost empty because everyone is kind of going into the other towns. So it is a very important thing for us as a businesses to have some kind of activities, withdraw people to stay in Morro Bay on the 4th of July. And so I would love to hear back from you guys what's Morro Bay stand on the fireworks. And the other topic is me as a business owner, I love the idea of having the aquarium in Embarcadero. It's very important for us as a family kind of environment town to have some activities for children and for families. People love the old aquarium, and I'm sure they would miss not having it this summer. But it's been kind of things where generation kind of took their kids, and now their kids is taking their own kids. So we would love to see that thing keep on continuing and moving on forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next up is Bill Martoni. And after that, I have Christine Stahl.
Good afternoon, Bill Martoni, Morro Bay. And mainly, 2 weeks ago at your meeting, Councilman Heller brought up the zoning and back in the area of Main Street, back by the past the boat launch. This area is actually currently called Mixed Use Area B, and I just wanted to kind of clarify. Jeff did a real excellent job on bringing up the issues. But what it is currently there's a zoning for a 20-lot area that starts. It starts from Acacia, it goes down to just where the road bends on Main Street going south towards the golf course. And there's a special zoning there now that is going to be eliminated in the new update. And what it is the special mixed-use Area B is no longer going to exist. And this, the main thing on this is it will actually upzone the water in the bay itself in the harbor zoning. The current zoning actually has the harbor zoning as mixed harbor use, and it limits it to recreational boating and fishing, and it talks about commercial fishing and all the commercial being up in Measure D in the northern end of the harbor. And by eliminating this mixed area B, it's actually going to eliminate that restriction south of the boat launch, and it will actually upzone the harbor and allow a more intensive use. I know they're talking about possibly industrial ships or other things would be able to come down there. Back in the 60s, when Sylvester's tug, or the tugs it was stocking at the time, were operating in front of the inn at Morro Bay or just north of there, the city actually said they had to move up to the Embarcadero because even at that time it was turning more of a residential zoning. And so that area was more designated for just low-key, you know, recreational boating. The current maps that are in place actually show the land zoning as about 50% waterfront commercial and about 50% residential zoning. The actual old map showed it as about 10%, which it currently is, commercial zoning right down below the bluff, and the other 90% is residential zoning. And I was trying to get that corrected to show the accurate map. And also there's another map in the update that shows that area as being a commercial, it shows it as a commercial corridor, which is totally inaccurate. And I was trying to get that map corrected. But primarily the zoning in the bay is being upzoned by eliminating special planning area B. And that's mainly the main issues that we've been hitting. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Next up is Christine Stoll. Christine? No. Okay. It's the last speaker slip I have. Public comment is still open as a general public comment for items on the agenda or where you can't stay or items not on the agenda. Welcome.
I really appreciate the fact that you allow us to address items on the agenda if we have to go, which I do. I don't want to get you folks sick. But there are a couple of things on the agenda that are really dear to my heart. And one of them is obviously about marine critters and creatures and the aquarium. And that's item C1. I want to make it clear that I don't necessarily oppose an aquarium. As a matter of fact, I encourage one, with several provisions. And the main focus I would like to see with that, and that, you know, you guys could actually steer that in the future, is that it be very definitely focused towards interactive education. There are a number of new technologies that allow for that, that also allow for minimal, actually a sustainable, more sustainable aquarium with minimal mortality and minimal human interaction. Most especially the large mammals are actually marine mammals and some of the larger invertebrates, i.e. the Pacific red octopus. I would really like to see that those particular animals be on the red list, as it were, that they not be included in the aquarium. But, you know, educational. And it would go really well hand-in-hand with the NEP education program and facility they have just north on the Embarcadero. The second thing that I would like to address is I am incredibly pleased to see that there is a resolution, number 17-19, that is going to be addressing opposing the piping and trucking of offshore oil through San Luis Obispo County. I understand that you have a resolution before you that is worded very strongly, very clearly, I want it to be, I want folks in the areas, in the counties around us and in this county, to really see very clearly that we as a city are opposing this, and that, you know, we're basically, you know, walking our talk here. We call ourselves We focus on ecotourism, and we also call ourselves a sanctuary. And I think it is more than appropriate that the city take these kinds of actions. So thank you very much. By the way, my name's Mandy Davis. I live here. I'm sick. I'm sorry. Bye.
Sorry that you're sick, Mandy, but thank you for your comments. Public comment is still open for items either on the agenda, which can't stay, or items not on the agenda.
I think I filled Welcome. Out a form, but...
Oh, did you? I'm sorry.
That's okay. No big deal.
That's you know, good. I probably said, you know, yeah. Chuck, you know, you it looks
you
like
go.
Christy to
it's
me.
Christy,
so
yeah.
I said Christy. So welcome, Christy.
Christy tonight. Okay.
Thanks,
My
Chuck.
Name is Chuck Stoll, and I live here in Morro Bay. First of all, I'd like to extend my thank you to all the hard work and efforts by Marlis for her work on C2. I hope this does pass through the city and that we can move forward on this issue. The second reason I'm here is to promote a fundraiser that our local Lions Club is promoting. It will be held on March 23rd, called Tunes and Noodles. Tunes and Noodles. Tunes and Noodles. And we are benefiting this year once again. It's our sixth year. The Del Mar Elementary Arts and Music Programs. As you're well aware, when budgets are cut, these are the first things usually that go. So we have been in support of that. And also, we are supporting the high school scholarships. So on March 23rd at the Community Center from 5 to 9, not only do you get tunes and noodles, but, oh, thanks. Appreciate that. But you also get to witness some of your local dignitaries dance to the most famous band in the Central Coast, and that's Burnin' James and the Funky Flames. So we're hoping that you'll join us. It's $15, and again, it's at the Community Center from 5 to 9:30. So if there's any questions, I'd certainly take them. I'm anxious to see you, Mayor, out there.
Okay. Are you asking me to dance? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll be out
Christine,
there.
Christine, remember?
You bet. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
Great event. Appreciate that. Public comment is still open. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Linda Fidel. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I am also here to speak in support of item C2 and to extend kudos to Marlis, who filled out what was really a miserable grant application. She did a wonderful job. It was not an easy job. I could regale you for hours about the joys of preparing our Monday night dinners in a kitchen that's 70 years old, but I don't want to do that. Instead, I want to talk to you tonight briefly about our guests, the people who come to the Monday night dinners. About 2 years ago, I was standing at the entrance to Veterans Hall when I saw a car pull up with two people, a man and a woman. The man booted the woman out of the car and then grabbed a duffel bag and threw it on the ground. At that moment, she became homeless. The reason I say that now is because, well, she was living with her sister. Her sister had died, and so the husband was now evicting his wife's sister. The reason I bring it up is because homelessness can happen to anybody. I mean, we all think that we're somehow different from homeless people, and it's really not true. We have guests here. Last night there were 85 people having dinner in this room. I estimate that between 10 and 15 of them were frankly homeless. Another 15 to 20 live in their cars or RVs. The other 50 to 60 are working poor or seniors. The 10 to 15 homeless people who were here last night would definitely benefit by many of the items that are in the proposal that Marlis wrote. They would benefit by having showers, by having a warming station on inclement nights. The 15 to 20 people who live in their cars and RVs would also benefit by having showers available to them, by having a warming station, possibly, and also, importantly, safe parking. Safe parking is one of the easiest things to implement, and it is considered by many experts in the area of homeless to be the kind of the simplest thing to do that provides the greatest benefit. Anyway, please support the proposal that Marlis has written. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Public comment is still open. Welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I am Andrew Christie. I suspect I'm that stray comment card you have. I am the director of the San Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. On behalf of our 3,000 members in San Luis Obispo County, we want to thank you for the resolution on your consent agenda expressing the city's opposition to allowing Plains Pipeline, a convicted felon, to rebuild its oil pipeline through our county, and permitting Exxon's plan to send 70 oil tanker trucks a day from Santa Barbara through Slo County. Thank you for linking these two projects and pointing out that both would be in furtherance of the same goal, restarting moribund oil platforms and extending the lifespan of oil extraction off the coast of Central California, contravening the goals of the city and the state, calling for the shift from fossil fuels to clean energy as soon as possible, and drastically reducing, not increasing, carbon emissions. Opposing these projects is necessary for the city to realize its stated goals on oil and gas extraction and the creation of a framework for renewable energy development. In furtherance of those goals, we also hope the city will adopt policies of divestment from fossil fuel companies and investment in industries that are helping to avert catastrophic climate change. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Public comment is still open. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is John Barberi. I'm a resident of Morro Bay here, and I have some 40 years of experience in oceans and marine and environmental matters, and I'm here to speak to the issue of the aquarium, and I would like to thank the council and the city for moving it forward. Hopefully, by the end of tonight, you will have moved it a little bit farther along. I've read the feasibility study, and, you know, aquariums are great for the reasons that I've already mentioned. There are three critical components to doing something like this, a field that I used to work in many moons ago. It's concept, design, and money. And I did feel the feasibility study was somewhat lacking in the concept area. I'd be interested in knowing if there was a charrette performed where stakeholders were brought together to provide input, including from many successful aquariums and models that exist throughout California and throughout the nation. You know, I don't know that that was done, or if it was, who participated. That's a very important component because it impacts directly upon the ability to raise funds for a very worthy project. I would also hope that looking forward, the city might consider longer range, perhaps a joint powers agreement with the county and the state, and in more of a private-public partnership to look beyond this to something that might encompass all uses of the oceans. There's a lot of exciting things happening, ocean exploration and marine scientific research, marine recreation, marine transportation, the physical sciences, the biological sciences, and I think there's an opportunity to do this here on the Central Coast because I think the market will support it. Finally, I would hope that Cal Poly's, I didn't see anything really about a research plan for Cal Poly in here, and they have some very talented people at the university. I would hope that their focus would be on the ecosystem, the local ecosystem, of which we know so little about. We probably know less than one-third of the species that exist in our own local area, and there are many, many yet to be discovered, and hopefully that inquiry, that excitement of discovery is something that can be shared with children, visiting researchers, and the general public. Aquariums, by their very nature, are educational institutions, and hundreds of millions of people have a different way of thinking about the natural world around us because of public aquariums and even zoos, for that matter. So I want to thank you for moving this. I hope you continue to move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is still open. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Leah Height. I teach at Morro Bay High School, and this is my student.
I'm Greg Olson, and I'm a student of Morro Bay High School. I'd like to speak about the benefits of an aquarium for Morro Bay. And since the line is closing down, I really value, as a person, an aquarium, because I think it's just a fun place to go and to see all the animals and to be. And considering we're Morro Bay and we're by the coast and the ocean and the rock is our main thing that makes us unique, and just being here at this beautiful place, I think an aquarium would really fit where we are at geologically, and it would bring in more tourists, bringing in more money, and bringing in more popularity to our town.
Yeah, and I use, we are at the beach a lot in my biology classes, and I'd really like the City of Morro Bay to continue work with the Central Coast Aquarium and bring it to Morro Bay. I'm consistently doing marine science research with my biology students. I'm currently working with the NEP, and we're going to actually go tomorrow to Coleman Beach and do microplastic collecting to see what microplastics are in our sand. So we do a lot of work with them, and then I also work with a limpets national program where we collect sand crabs, ID sand crabs, and determine male, female, things like that, numbers, and put it in a national database. And for the past about 5 years or so, I've worked with the Central Coast Aquarium. We've been able to obtain grants and have had aquarium specialists come to Morro Bay, and they've taken us to the sand spit, and we've done sort of data collection with sand dollars and water testing as well. And it's been very fun and helpful and hands-on for my students, and it's been a great experience. And having this CCA locally would be fantastic because we would be using the aquarium throughout our ecology unit. So we teach, I have a whole unit in biology, in ecology, which is generally based around sea otters, sea mammals, and biodiversity in the bay. So please consider continue working with the Central Coast Aquarium. Thank you.
Thank you. And Greg, I just wanted to say thank you as a young person for coming out and being involved in government. I really want to applaud you, and I'm suggesting to your teacher that you get extra credit for that. So I'm hoping, and that'll be on TV as well. Thanks for coming out tonight.
Okay.
Okay. And next up for public comment, still open. Welcome.
Well, my name is Doug Redican, and I have the Roses Landing leasehold. That's a tough act to
Welcome,
follow.
Welcome, Doug.
For all the reasons they just spoke to, I'm a big supporter of Christine's project. I think the city needs it. It's not even a question. It's just how do we fund it? How do we get it done? So I'm here supporting it 100%, so good luck.
Thank you. Public comment still open. Welcome.
Councilman staff. Appreciate being here. My name is Cliff Branch, and I'm a lifelong resident of the Central Coast and a leaseholder, as you probably know, boatyard. The aquarium project is one of the most essential elements of the future viability of the Embarcadero. I'm a fan, and I personally donated to help fund Christine's vision. I think it's a key for the city and for a whole bunch of reasons. We can all see the internet has impacted traditional retail stores, even on the Embarcadero and in Morro Bay. So the Embarcadero district needs to evolve to offer tourists experiences and products that they can't get on their phone or their tablet or their in their pajamas at their computer. The aquarium perfectly fits that business model. And the completion of Centennial Park and that project, and I know you guys have some property up for sale, they're all essential elements. I've been in the real estate business for 50 years. We're in kind of a similar business. You have 30-some-odd lease sites. We have 50 tenants that are local, regional, national, and several counties. So I have had 50 years here to watch Morro Bay evolve, and I think the aquarium is really important. So the first step, as Doug pointed out, was to figure out how we fund this. And I also wanted to publicly thank Eric Indersby and Scott Graham and John Heading for helping to resolve a problematic situation with the seawall in a positive manner. Anyway, I look forward to continuing to be your tenant.
Thanks, Cliff. Appreciate it. Next up for public comment.
Mayor Heading, council women and men, thanks for having me tonight. Actually, I'm here just to introduce myself. I'm Eric Prater, superintendent of San Luis Coastal Unified School District. And I'm here tonight to let you know that last week our school board approved the agreement for a school resource officer, a full-time school resource officer for the Morro Bay High School and Del Mar Elementary School. And I believe that MOU is also on your consent agenda. I would like to acknowledge Scott Collins and Chief Cox for their excellent collaboration and work with my team to make sure that this SRO agreement is put together for the benefit of the safety of our schools and our community. As superintendent, I can tell you that school safety and student wellness is at the forefront of my waking mind, making sure that we've done everything we can to make sure that our schools are safe, that our partners with local law enforcement and cities are as strong as possible. And this is, I think, a positive step forward. I love working with your team. They're just outstanding people and great representatives of this wonderful city. And I'm honored to be here to say those things. And I'm looking forward to an ongoing partnership well into the future. And this hopefully will make our schools even safer than they already are. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent. Appreciate you being here tonight. Public comment is still open. Any items not on the agenda or items that you cannot stay for? The countdown begins. Looking around, seeing no interest in further public comment. Thank you to all of those that came out. I will close public comment, bring it back to council. Just noted a couple of items maybe to comment on. And let's see, the first, Mr. Graham, could you comment on Mr. Martone's zoning comments regarding the mixed use issue in the new general plan? That would be perhaps not. Computer's not working. Ah.
How's this?
Okay, thank you.
There we go.
Thank you.
Sure. I'll speaking to the mixed-use area B, Mr. Martone is correct. That has been removed from the draft plan Morro Bay. Mr. Martone has spoken on several occasions to your General Plan Advisory Committee and your Planning Commission, and they have chosen not to put it back. And so the language that relates to that item is no longer in the draft. As it relates to the zoning map and how it looks, that has to do with the GIS layer that's laying over the top of it. We are seeking to resolve some of that. If you make it so thin that you can't see it, it needs to stick out a little bit further and be wide enough so that you can actually see the zone when it's printed on a map. And the current GIS map that we have extends out into the water a little bit, shows the zoning that extends out into the water. In speaking with Mr. Martone and going back through our records, have clarified that it doesn't do that, and it is the zoning that sits on his property in that location is only on land. It does not extend into the water. And so we're aware of the issue that he raised, and the maps will be altered so that they don't extend so far out into the water, I guess. We have draft maps that are on the website, and they still reflect the issue that Mr. Martone raises, but we are aware of it and we'll be resolving it when we put forward final drafts.
Great. Thank you for that. And just a general response to the folks that were here regarding pickleball and opportunities for getting that onto the agenda, I would suggest that you contact our city manager, Scott Collins, to kind of formulate the idea of what you'd like on the agenda, and then that could be brought forward for consideration. So just want to make sure you knew where your contact was for that. And let's see. I also have Mr. Collins, can you comment on the fireworks issue in the city and or Chief Knuckles or whoever might have information on the city's position? Now, I know that there were private organizations in the past that were formed, not-for-profit, that did offer fireworks over a number of years, but over the last 2 or 3 years, we've not had that. But I'm wondering if there are any general comments that you could provide on that. So,
The discussion predates my tenure here, so I'll defer to staff. I think there was a couple summers ago, maybe 2 or 3, where there was discussion leading up to it, but beyond that, yeah.
Within our Muni Code, we're allowed to have public shows, and it just got to get a permit through the fire department. And we just, in the last few years, have not had anyone step up wanting to have a show. Our public can have safe and sane fireworks on their property only. So it doesn't allow visitors to come to our beaches and use fireworks, bring them from a different county, bring them into our city and use them. But our citizens are allowed to use safe and sane on their personal property in the city limits of Morro Bay. But again, anyone can come up, and once they have a fireworks show, we would go through a permit process. A lot of people get involved in that, not just the fire department, but a lot of other folks, too, to make sure they're safe and safe for the environment also.
I would make one addition to that.
Sure, absolutely.
The permitting process, and I think what was referred to when the person spoke at the podium related to didn't get the permit in time, didn't submit the permit in time or the materials in time. What they were referring to was our need to obtain a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission to have fireworks. And so you do have to start early on because it does take them a little while to process that. And that was one of the issues. The secondary issue, I think, as to why it went away was there was not a group out there that was putting it forward. And when the group did sort of coalesce, it was kind of late in the process for us to talk with Coastal to get a permit. We did contact them, but they weren't going to be able to get a coastal development permit put together for us in time to meet the 4th of July deadline when you want to have the fireworks. So, and we haven't had that desire, or a group come forward requesting similar permits in the last couple of years. So,
If there were interested parties in the community that wanted to do that, when should they begin formulating a plan and talking with the appropriate authorities?
Today.
That's what I thought you'd say. Or yesterday, possibly. Thank you for that. I think I covered all of the items that required responses. And again, thank you for your public comments, those that were here. With that, I'll move to the consent agenda. I'm going to open public comment for items on the consent agenda. Any members of the public wanting to come forward, please do so at this time. And I'll take speaker slips if you have them. Welcome. Try it again.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, and staff. I'm here. My name's Jane Heath. I'm here tonight representing Maston Bay Properties, LLC, regarding consent item A7. And the property owner's representatives, Julie Dickinson, is here. And we'd be happy to answer, address any questions or provide any background or context if necessary. However, the item's on the consent agenda, and as long as it stays there, we're content to just ask council to please adopt Resolution 1819 and allow my clients to go forward with their parcel map, and we'll remain here in case you need us. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. I have a speaker slip. That was Jane. Okay. I still have got it after the fact, but public comments open for items on the consent agenda. Welcome.
My name is Scott Lawson, Morro Bay resident. I'm speaking in opposition to the proposed abandonment of the public right-of-way along Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street. Is it consistent with the city general plan? The proposed abandonment of the public right-of-way is at the most prominent downtown intersection. With the city considering build-out to 12,000 residents, looking for ways to encourage more business in the downtown and increase tourism, it doesn't make sense to abandon right-of-way that is needed for the expected increase in foot traffic. The only public benefit cited has been an increase in property tax revenue for the city. How much additional revenue is it? Has this been calculated? Is it stated in the staff report to the planning it is stated in the staff report to the Planning Commission that the property owner wants to sell the property and wants to clear up encroachment issues with that in mind, sacrificing public space in order to make private property more attractive to a buyer is not in the public interest. Keeping the existing right-of-way is consistent with the general plan, and if future development of the site is proposed, the encroachment can be addressed at that time. I ask that you do not adopt the resolution and keep the existing right-of-way.
Thank you. Public comment is open for items on the consent agenda. Seeing no other speaker slips, and looking to my left and right, seeing no further individuals interested, I will close public comment on that and bring it back to council and ask if there are any items to pull. If so, which ones? And if not, I'll take a motion for approval.
I'd like to pull item A4.
Okay. A4.
I'd like to pull item A7.
A7 and A4. Any others? If not, I will take a motion for approval of the remainder. That would be A1, A2, A3, A5, A6.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1 with Councilmember Davis absent.
And item A4, Councilmember McPherson?
Right. I just have a couple of questions that I wanted to ask Mr. Leivick, if that's permissible.
Certainly.
I just had a couple of questions about the Kestrel contract amendment, and if you could just tell me a little bit more about the grant that is being applied for, approximately how much money might we stand to get, and what would that grant be for?
So the primary grant that they're looking at currently is Title 16 through the Department of Interior Bureau of Reclamation is for water reclamation projects. Depending on congressional appropriations, of course, it's up to $20 million or 25% of the project. These grants are typically awarded after construction already starts, but it's applicable to the entire project.
And it relates to recycling?
Recycling water, yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And then other grants that we're looking at would be the Bureau of Reclamation's Water Smart Grant. That's a smaller amount of money, and it's for water recycling. That has a maximum award of about $1 million. And then there's potential for Army Corps of Engineers grant money for wetlands mitigation. And we'll be crossing a minor wetlands area with the pipeline, so we would be looking to apply for that grant money also.
Okay. And the amendment is for time and materials. So.
Yes, it's typically our consultant contracts are time and materials, and if they're not needed, they don't work and don't bill, and so it's up to that amount, but not to exceed without prior authorization.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to move for approval of item A4.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Councilmember McPherson, second by Councilmember.
Can I comment? Or? Oh,
sure. Yes, I will. Okay. After I, yeah. Yeah. Councilmember Addis and discussion.
Yes.
Sorry. thank you. I'm new at this, but first off, I'm not sure that this really is an appropriate consent item, to be honest with you. In looking at the candidate's handbook on what a consent item is, it says. Only items that are routine. Uh, relate to implementation approved budget items and city operations or items at a later date set for public hearing should be placed on consent. I don't think that A4 or A7 should be consent items, frankly. A4, because it relates to the WERF and we don't have an approved project schedule or budget that I'm aware of, I have a number of questions. And I think that this item should be reclassified as a public comment or a business item. Having said that, I'm going to go ahead with my questions. At the current time, is there a spending limit that the city manager and the public works director work under with respect to expenditure of funds for the WERF project?
Basically, the city manager has a threshold of $125,000 for contracts prior to seeking council approval. I think we exceeded that amount prior to with Kestrel, but I'll leave that for Rob to answer. So when we do contract amendments, we come back if they exceeds that amount for council approval. And to answer the other question, the comment about, you know, is this kind of a typical regular thing that could wind up on consent, I would argue yes, it could be, particularly in light of the fact that council, all five council members said they wanted to de-emphasize the WERF at the March 1st goals session, and we were also advised that we wanted shorter council meetings, and these are pretty standard contracts. I understand the WERF is a big issue, but the budget has been set, the rates have been approved. So it's from the opinion of staff, it falls under that kind of typical thing. But I'll leave Rob to answer the question if the Kestrel contract would exceed that amount.
Yeah. The Kestrel contract exceeds the amount authorized by staff to award and had to come back to City Council for your consideration and authorization for execution of that contract.
So my understanding is, did you say 175?
125.
125, yeah. Okay, because the staff report, I think, says up to 175.
There was a resolution passed by council that conflicts a little bit with that, that authorized the public works director to actually exceed the city manager's authority up to $175,000.
Good for you.
But we generally use the $125,000 as the limit. This was during a time of when we had interim city managers, and they weren't willing to execute a contract.
Okay. So if I understand it correctly, up to $125,000 or $175,000 per contract, as long as you're within the annual budget, you're authorized to spend that money. Is that right?
That would be correct.
Okay. Is there an official baseline program budget for the WERF, and where would I find it?
There's a budget in annual budget in the budget document that gets approved by council.
Okay.
So it's in the capital project section of the budget document.
I understand there's an annual budget, but is there a program budget somewhere that I can reference?
There is a overall program budget that is contained within the rate study that gives the expenditures for each of the various components of the project.
Okay, so could you send me a link on that? I'd appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, I can.
Okay. So this is another thing I have. As you know, Mr. City Manager, I have an issue with the way the subject matter is written. I'm not too happy with this one because really there are two separate consultants here that with different issues that I think need to be discussed. The first one is the EIR consultant. So ESA is the EIR consultant that prepared, completed, and certified the EIR for the entire project, and it was approved by the mayor and the city council in August of 2018. Is that right, Mr. Livey?
Yes, I believe that date's correct.
And the cost of that was $350,000?
Yes.
Okay. Now we have the conceptual design package completing for the piping portion of the work, and some changes have been made. Some pumps have been added and some other things. So we need an addendum, is that right, to the original certified EIR, and that's what the $30,666 is for?
Yes, the EIR consultant needs to address those changes, and initially they believe it to be an addendum, but they need to complete their assessment. It could be as simple as an addendum, but once they finish their analysis, it could require a supplement to the EIR or a myriad of environmental issues if they come across any issues. They do not believe that there are any issues because that area was the corridor was studied in the EIR, not the specific additional pump station was added or the changes to the alignment. So
okay. And then you reference possible additional work of up to about $96,000, which you or the city manager want to encumber. Can you tell me what this additional work might be?
That is field work as necessary to confirm the environmental conditions that might be encountered or any additional follow-up work on the EIR. Like I said, those are time and materials contracts. If we don't need the work, we won't be authorizing that work, nor will we be billed for it.
Okay. The second part of this item is the Kestrel consultant. Do you call this a funding support consultant, or what is this kind of a consultant called?
Funding support, grant writer. They help us apply for grant money, grant and loan monies. They have experience with the various grants and loans that we're approaching.
Should I call them a grant writing consultant?
Yes.
Okay. Can you explain to me what a crosswalk document is?
We prepared a water reclamation master plan, and the Bureau of Reclamation has a submittal requirement for their Title 16 grant that the water master plan basically meets. This crosswalk document translates the water reclamation master plan to the format that BOR wants it in. So it tells the Bureau of Reclamation what section to go to in that document and answers their specific questions regarding the grant.
Okay. Well, as long as you understand that, that's the main thing. Now, if my math is correct, Crestrel has been paid $145,000 or so to date for assisting with Pursuit of WIFI and the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. Have we secured funding from either of these sources yet?
The State Revolving Fund application was submitted and indicated that we scored the maximum amount of points possible. The funding list does not come out until the first of next month, so we'll find out then. We are working with the EPA on the WIFIA to answer the questions that they still have regarding. They have to do a full NEPA on the project, so there's additional environmental work that is necessary, consultation regarding archaeological Native American issues that are on federalized projects that aren't on state-funded projects. So we're working with them to answer those questions. We meet biweekly by telephone to make sure we're still on track for the funding of that project.
Okay, so if I'm correct, the only funding we've secured so far for the WRF is a $10.4 or $10.7 million loan that we're not drawing on. Is that correct?
That and a water reclamation grant that we received from the State Board for $75,000 for the preparation of our master water reclamation plan.
Okay. Then you've identified an additional funding opportunity, U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, Title 16 grant. And
yes.
You hope to find another opportunity in the future. So the proposal from Kestrel for this work is about $74,000. That's to pursue these other opportunities, is that correct?
That and to complete the coordination on the Title 16 Bureau of Reclamation grant funding.
Okay, so the $74,000 would include the USBR pursuit as well as one additional opportunity yet to be identified?
Yes.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. We have a motion by Councilmember McPherson, second by Councilmember Addis. I'll take a roll call vote.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
No.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 3-1-1 with Councilmember Heller opposed and Councilmember Davis absent.
Item A7, Councilmember Heller.
So the questions I have on A7, again, which I do not think is a consent item, because basically it's a giving away of public property at no compensation with no public benefit to right-of-way, which is described in the documents for the city as an irrevocable right in ownership of the city. So a right-of-way, most of you know, is where sidewalks are not built now but could be in the future. And this particular item, again, which I don't think is a consent item, asks that the city give away some of our right-of-way to the benefit of two property owners at a very major intersection in Morro Bay. No one is to say what size the population of the city will be 50 years from now, but I think it's a grave error to give away right-of-way, which, for any reason, specifically to benefit two property owners and no benefit to the public. This is an item that should have been brought to either as a business item or public hearing to be discussed in a time when we are trying to establish trust with our community that's been so divided over the sewer project. I consider that our putting this as a consent item is a mistake and is a brick in the wall against open government and transparency and reflecting the public's needs.
Do you have any questions?
I have no questions.
Okay. So I'll take entertain a motion on A7.
I move we approve A7.
Second?
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember McPherson, second by Mayor Heading. And roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
And Councilmember Heller?
Absolutely not.
Motion carries 3-1-1 with Councilmember Heller opposed and Councilmember Davis absent.
Thank you. That will move us to item number C1. We will be taking a 3-minute break after the beginning of the presentation to hook up an external link, and so if you'll prompt me at the appropriate time for that, I'll make sure that we have that break. But I'm going to go ahead and move to Mr. Andersby, our harbor director, to present item C1. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Heading. Good evening, Mayor and Council. So here we go on the aquarium item once again. So here we're here to introduce, discuss, and provide direction relative to the recently completed new Morro Bay Aquarium market and economic feasibility study as opposed to the old Morro Bay Aquarium, the existing aquarium. It's in your staff report as attachment one, recently completed by consultant ConsultiCon for the Central Coast Aquarium. And the second part is to discuss and provide direction relative to the future of the old aquarium site, the existing lease site 6970, which now lies vacant. Recommend you receive a report and provide direction relative to both the issues, the study, and the use of the site in the near future, as discussed a little bit later. No fiscal impacts at this time. Quick background, 50-year Pitkin lease. It expired last fall. The site has been vacant since then. After much public debate and other input starting about 2011 and 2013, the council directed staff to put out the site to an RFP bid, out to public bid. The RFP stipulated the redevelopment would be a new modern aquarium and marine education and marine educational in nature, and specifically stipulated no marine mammals. That's something we definitely wanted to see gone. The RFP was issued in the fall of 2013, and although CCA, Central Coast Aquarium, which was originally the Avila Sea Life Center, expressed interest in the project, no formal proposals were received. We did extend the RFP deadline date, I think by either 6 or 12 months, still received no formal responses. However, CCA was still interested and continued to work with Cal Poly and the city in a collaborative process to realize a potential new state-of-the-art aquarium. And in May 2016, the council approved a consent of landowner, or COL, for their new reproposed facility. Cal Poly Architecture Department was involved in that, as well as Cal Poly Coastal Marine Sciences. And so that consent to landowner was issued that had certain compliance dates for completion of certain steps. In February 2017, we extended all those steps. The council extended all those deadlines to enable CCA to fundraise for needed feasibility, planning, and other studies, and capital cost associated with a tentative $20 million USDA loan that they had gone to Department of Agriculture and tentatively received approval on, initial approval on, to move forward into the steps of application. Unfortunately, CCA did not meet their deadlines for those compliance dates. And in May 2018, Christine Johnson became the new executive director of CCA and embarked on a renewed effort to obtain professionally prepared financial feasibility study on the project. Everyone at that point, I think, recognized that what is its financial feasibility and could it pay for itself and under what circumstances. So that became the necessary next step. The city donated $10,000 towards that effort, and CCA raised the additional $30,000 needed for the study. At that time, the USDA loan was still in play, and they hired ConsultiCon, who you'll hear from tonight, and the study's here tonight for review. ConsultiCon is a consulting firm that has experience guiding nonprofits, specifically zoos and aquariums, in these sort of processes. They're nationally recognized, and the question of the feasibility study is really, is the project financially viable and under what circumstances? So this is direct from the study, and I think you're going to hear some more about this tonight from Ms. Johnson and from ConsultiCon, so I'll try and be as brief as possible. The highlights of the study, from the facility standpoint, it's assumed to be about 4,000 square feet and contain about 7,500 gallons of exhibit water. It focuses on the uniqueness of Morro Bay with aquaria touch tanks, displays, and educational opportunities, facilities for Cal Poly to conduct and exhibit their research, teams with local on-the-water operators in Morro Bay for educational on-water experiences, and that CCA is well situated to operate because of their 25-year track record and experience operating their facility down in Avalon. The market and economic potential highlights were that the new facility has the potential to generate $691,000 in annual stable year earned revenue, meaning after initial opening, revenues tend to spike in facilities like this, and they drop down to a more moderate level. So this would be the stable year earned revenue, meaning revenue that they get from admission and sales. The new facility would benefit and enhance existing inventory of attractions in the region, meaning it wouldn't necessarily be competing with other attractions, other like attractions. There's a large and growing tourism base that will increase visitation. I think the data from 2017 indicated there are about 800,000 tourist visits in Morro Bay. The resident market includes all of San Luis Obispo County, and aquariums are a well-known and popular attraction type with high degree of success predicated on several things. One is solid planning and feasibility analysis, which is what this plan is partially encompassing. Solid financial and business plan, which obviously would need to be developed. Good accessible locations and solid markets. I think we've got the location. The solid market appears to be there. And compelling exhibits and what the aquarium needs to develop. And finally, the stable year and annual mid-range attendance of about 52,000. That's about 12,000 from the resident market and 12% from the resident market and 88% from the tourist market. The old aquarium purported to have about 200,000 visitors per year, which, if I do my math, which I hate to do in public, it amounted to, I think, 300 some odd visitors per day. So that was the numbers that we had gotten from the old Morro Bay Aquarium. Similar size U.S. aquarium benchmark attendance of about 50,000, so the number is right in the benchmark range. Assumed adult admission price of about $9.95 with per visitor spending of $4. Estimated annual facility rentals of about $52 for special and other events. So when aquariums shut down for the night and the evening, they don't shut down typically. There's other special events that occur, corporate retreats, weddings, all sorts of things occur in those facilities. An estimated 9 FTEs, meaning full-time equivalent employees to manage and operate the facility. On the expense end, stable year annual operating expenses of $813,000 from salaries and benefits. The largest chunk, cost of goods sold, other expenses, which is a kind of a catch-all. Obviously, running aquarium is a fair amount of maintenance and electrical and other utility expenses. and then about 39,000 in capital reserves. So obviously, from expenses to reserves, there's a $122,000 deficit between revenues and expenses to be made up with contributed or non-earned sources. As will be noted, there are no proposed loan payments in here from USDA. That is missing, and there's also, if you read deeply into the report, the details on it, they're not proposing any lease expenses either. The deficit is typically made up with ongoing fundraising, financial reserves or an endowment, operating grants, or a government sector support or partnership. The study found that virtually all public aquariums require contributed revenues, in other words, non-earned revenues, philanthropy, or public-private partnerships to operate. Operating expenses of CCA's proposal is covered about 85% by earned revenues. The industry standard is about 75 to 80%, so their coverage is a little better than industry standard, so they're not outside the norm. And then non-earned benchmark sources for aquarium development funding, meaning to build the place, private philanthropy, that's fundraising, public grants, revenue bonds, tax incentives, or donated or subsidized land. And again, CCA's proposal assumes no loan or lease payments. CCA has operated in Avila for about 25 years on county-owned land for $1 a year with major capital and construction funding from the Unocal oil spill remediation. If you remember, that occurred, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, and all that started and ended up in a settlement where Unocal paid a good sum of money towards various projects, including this project. So that's what got them their capital funding. Post-construction, CCA relied on about $100,000 a year in that remediation funding to continue their operation. When that funding ended in 2013, their budget deficit was about $105,000. Their budget deficit in 2017 was reported to be about $1,500, and their year-end 2018 budget is reportedly at about a $20,000 surplus. So it appears that they've come back from needing that settlement money to being self-supporting with their fundraising. CCA's board directed their staff to continue pursuing the Morro Bay project based on the assumptions and recommendations of the ConsultiCon study, and they indicated the success of the project relies on the partnership with the city, which again includes no lease payments. And getting down to the end. January 26th this year, CCA board voted unanimously to move forward to the Morro Bay City Council with the intention of releasing this economic feasibility study, which we have tonight, establishing if the city is interested in pursuing the project in partnership with CCA and Cal Poly. If so, forming a short-term task force, recommending for a year or proposing for 1 year to seek opportunities for major capital investment. Members could include city staff, CCA staff, board members, interested members of the community. And then all funding opportunities must return to CCA and the city for discussion. Those, if they find a good funding source, those would come back to the city and CCA for continued discussion. And then reassess the project status at the end of the timeline, whatever that is established at. So, for council consideration tonight, we believe what we're looking at is the city willing to continue forward with CCA as outlined in the CCA's board action that I just went over, including a one-year timeline? B, if yes, to what degree will the city partner in and or support the capital-seeking task force effort? C, any other specific direction staff council wishes to give staff, including choosing members for the proposed task force? And then D, council input and direction to options to operate the site on an interim basis. At this time, CCA is not proposing to occupy the site as we had originally anticipated, the existing Morro Bay Aquarium site, because they believe they need to focus all their time, energy, and effort into this fundraising effort, and that will just be a financial and administrative distraction. In the meantime, we've been cleaning, preparing the downstairs front portion of the existing building for occupancy before summer starts. Your staff report goes in a little more detail. There's a lot of stuff was left. We're still digging through a lot of materials left and a lot of debris left, and we've gone through the safety element of it. Council directed that quite a while ago. Had our electrician. That was our biggest concern. Didn't find any major outward electrical problems. Disconnected the 220-volt system. Everything else looks pretty good, so now we're just trying to get it cleaned up and do something with it, including potentially renting the dock out front just to get some revenue coming on that site. Any questions?
So, yeah. Thank you. Very comprehensive report. What I'm going to do is ask the council to hold off on questions. I'll ask Ms. Johnson from Central Coast Aquarium to come up. And now would be the time to make the break. So I'm getting the AGP video, folks. We're going to take a three-minute break. Ms. Johnson, while you get ready and try to connect your external consultant, I have 7:06. How about 7:10 for a health break? Thank you. Be right back.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, just hang tight. We're going to start the meeting shortly.
Thank you.
Okay. If you can make your way back, we would appreciate that. We're ready to begin. Thank you. We'll reconvene our meeting. And thank you, AGP, for making the arrangements. Ms. Johnson, are you ready to give us your report? Thank you. I'll turn it over to you. Welcome,
hey.
Christine.
Thank you. Thank you. Christine Johnson, Central Coast Aquarium Executive Director. Thanks for having us here this evening. And I'm going to dive right into our presentation in the essence of time. And I'm going to turn sideways so I can follow the slides as I go. Thank you so much. So the mission of the Central Coast Aquarium is to cultivate a community dedicated to ocean stewardship through education, engagement, and action. Our board of directors, I'll list their names, and when they're here tonight, they'll give you a wave. Our chair, Debbie Collins. Our treasurer, Jeff Priolo. Our secretary, Dr. Dean Wendt. And then directors at large, John Lindsay, Kristen Meal, who couldn't be here but sends her regrets, Tim Williams, and Richard Zaki, who sends his regrets as well. They are a volunteer board of directors, I should comment. History. The Central Coast Aquarium, this is our current name, but it was founded by Russ and Carol Kiesig. The Central Coast Aquarium is as a 501c3 nonprofit located in Avila Beach, and it's been providing marine science and interactive hands-on marine science education to children and adults for 25 years. 2019 is our celebration of 25 years here, providing this education to our community and beyond. And I'm so pleased to have Carol Kiesig here with us this evening. And unfortunately, Russ passed away in 2005 and wasn't able to see the fruition of much of the vision he started 25 years ago. Harford Pier Beginnings, initially called the Port St. Louis Marine Institute. Maybe some of you remember that from 25 years ago. Originally, classes were taught out and open on the pier by Russ, and then later moved into a space rented from the Old Port Inn, also on the Harford Pier, meanwhile always searching for a facility of its own. A facility for school groups. The dream of the marine science education facility for K through 12 visiting school groups was made a reality, as Eric mentioned earlier, by the UNICAL settlement funds for the cleanup of Avila Beach's underground oil spill, but it had always been a dream of the Kiesigs to have their own facility. The building was constructed, opening in 2006, at the current location, 50 San Juan Street, and the name was changed at that time to broaden its reach to the Avila Beach Sea Life Center. Slo County Partnership. As you've heard mentioned in the report, there is a strong partnership right from the beginning. Slo County granted the land where the facility sits today for a $1 a year lease. This public and private partnership stands currently, and the Avila Beach Community Services District manages the land lease for the county. CCA, current, well, I'm jumping ahead a little, but the current operator of the aquarium, known now as CCA, owns the building entirely, and there is no mortgage. Opening to the public. Initially planned as a marine science center exclusively for school students is the dream. The increase in the public's interest, you know, people knocking on the door wanting to come in, coupled with the need for long-term financial stability. Volunteer docents helped open the exhibit hall to the public in 2010 in the summer and on some weekends. Currently, over 80 active volunteers continue to assist. A rebrand and expand. In an effort to reach again more residents and visitors and to better reflect the countywide nature of the programs, the organization was renamed the Central Coast Aquarium in 2013. In 2017, CCA opened its doors 6 days a week all year long to welcome the public and to help sustain operations. Achieving sustainability, a worthy goal for any nonprofit, and actually any city, too, if you think about it these days. In 2013, UNICAL settlement funds ended. As was mentioned a little earlier, CCA lost $100,000 a year in operating funding. And it takes a while. It's a shock, of course, for anyone. But the leadership team was very strong, Central Coast Aquarium board and staff. They embarked on a multi-year strategy to reach sustainability and incrementally each year improve results. To fiscal year 2017, nearly break even, 2018, It shows a $20,000 surplus, and that's an unaudited amount because we haven't yet completed our year-end tax return. How did they do it? Actions taken: streamlining operations, recruiting more volunteers, increasing philanthropic and grant writing efforts, and opening, finally, 6 days a week year-round from 10 to 4, closed on Mondays. Aquarium Exhibit Visit Hall, Aquarium Exhibit Hall visitors, you can see 2016 still not open full time. 17, part of 17 was open, 23,000 people. And in 2018, we welcomed 27,000 individuals to Avila Beach. School programs, still very strongly serving K through 12 students. It's the core of our mission. 3,800 students visited Central Coast Aquarium from San Luis Obispo districts, plus about four surrounding counties. It depends on the year. Sometimes we get students from four, five, six counties. 60% of our students served are from low-income families. They're considered Title I schools. Many of you have heard that term. Teachers regularly comment to us that some students see the ocean for the first time when visiting CCA, including many students from northern Santa Barbara County, Santa Maria, Paso Robles, and areas within our own region. Room to grow with school programs. We have a wait list for K through 12 school programs right now due to just simply size limitations and staff capacity. More teaching space would help us reach more students, the majority of whom are from low-income families. We also do a mobile touch tank program called Tadpoles on Tour. That's a big bang from your buck. We can reach a lot of people that way. When we take it on the road, 2,100 participants in 2018 enjoyed Tadpoles on Tour, including Morro Bay Library. And then we have a preschool program when we're closed on Mondays for maintenance. Once a month for about 8 or 9 months of the year, we open for five-year-old children and their adult. And we had 230 children take us up on this in 2018. Total impact of 2018, 33,450 people participated in at least one Central Coast Aquarium Marine Science Education program. Memberships, 134 memberships were sold in 2018. It's $80 a year. This is the most economical way to visit the Central Coast Aquarium if you live in our region. General admission is $8. Seniors and military are $5. Children under 2 are free. We're just starting a Museums for All EBT card discount. You show your EBT card, and up to 5 people get in for $3. No matter. And then if you're a member, you can come at any time, unlimited visits for 1 year, up to 5 family members, so you don't have to pay that $8 every time. Discounts on programs, day camps, gift shop, special members only events, and it's an economical. Outdoor Discovery Park. If any of you have been to Avila lately, you've seen that we've enclosed a patio space next to the aquarium. It's an outdoor classroom. When not in use, we'll use it for special events rented by members of the public as an additional revenue source. Continuing to diversify our revenue. And then just something exciting, it's also we were gifted a public art wall mural by the Avila Beach Community Foundation, and so this will be not only exciting activities will be happening inside our walls, but outside of our walls, artist Colleen Nose, who's very well known in this area, will install a mural, and that's end of summer 2019. Okay, CCA Cal Poly. Current partnerships between CCA and Cal Poly, an MOU to provide fresh ocean water for our closed aquarium system, faculty support, board members, guest speakers, advisors, Morro Bay feasibility. I'm not going to whip through this one pretty quickly, except to say that we are willing to move forward, as Eric suggested, but I want to state we are very clear-eyed in the understanding of the challenges involving securing large philanthropic gifts for nonprofit endeavors, no matter how worthy they are. We will not be pursuing a project on our own in Morro Bay without the partnership with Cal Poly and the City of Morro Bay. Thanks to our donors, $44,000 was raised for the feasibility study, $30,000 being raised between May and September of 2018. Exceedingly grateful for over 50 community members, business owners in Morro Bay who contributed to that $30,000 amount. Thank you to the SLO County Community Programs Grant for $4,000 and originally kicking off the fundraising to the City of Morro Bay for $10,000. After many years of delay, we're happy to have these facts and figures, as I'm sure everyone else is, so now decisions can be made. I'm going to come back to these in a moment because I want to let some of our board members be released in case I know some of them have events this evening. So right now I'm going to invite Tim Williams up. He's in his daytime hours. He's CCO of Digital West, and he is a CCA board member. He's going to speak on behalf of the entire board of directors about this project.
Thanks, Christine. Wow, that was fast. That was good. It's my honor to be representing the board of directors and speaking to you today, and it's great to have all but two of them here tonight, too. This is something we're all very supportive of, and I'm honored to be part of this group. They're very engaged and community-focused. It was great to hear also the support from the community on what they're supporting for this event we're trying to get forward on with the aquarium. And the board, as you saw in the staff report, is also very supportive moving forward in partnership with Cal Poly and with the City of Morro Bay to explore the possibilities of securing private funding for a redeveloped Marine Science Center and public aquarium here in Morro Bay. CCA is also always seeking partnerships and to help us amplify our mission to reach and touch more people about marine science, but especially to inspire youth to become the next generation of ocean stewards, and if not, the next generation of marine scientists. We strongly believe that the CCA staff, led by our own Christine Johnson, and some more staff members are here today too, they are capable of managing this process through the capital phase while also managing the day-to-day operations in Avila. As this project has taken more time to launch than originally hoped, we have faith now that this is the time to pursue this opportunity and see what is possible. So we're all very excited and engaged, and we're looking forward to the discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and I do want to mention, before I ask Dr. Wendt to come forward, we do have three team members from CCA in the audience. Our Director of Husbandry, Emily's... I always want to call you Stanford. Emily Sanford and Travis Norton, Director of Program, who does work with many of the students that came tonight. You heard them talking about the programs that they're going to have at Morro Bay High. He's involved here quite often. And then also Kim Jeffries is one of our, well, she is our aquarium coordinator who manages our gift shop and really pretty much does everything else you could ask her to do. So at this point, while we're working on getting the IT going for the slideshow, I'm going to ask Dr. Dean Wendt to come forward and speak. He has a unique role. He's both on our board, and he's also the dean of the College of Mathematics and Sciences at Cal Poly, and he'll be able to speak specifically to some potential Cal Poly interest.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Christine. Good evening. I'm pleased to be here to talk to you a little bit about Cal Poly's interest in really growing growing our partnership that we've had for many years in Avila. And Christine mentioned some of the things that we've been doing together as two organizations supporting one another in Avila. And we see a logical extension here to Morro Bay. And Cal Poly is very excited to be at the table with the City of Morro Bay and with the Central Coast Aquarium to explore what this would look like moving forward. And I know there are clear benefits for Cal Poly and the Center for Coastal Marine Sciences. We have a marine sciences undergraduate major, about 15 faculty that focus their scholarship on marine sciences, and a long history of doing work in Morro Bay, studying the community ecology in the area in various capacities, looking at the hydrodynamics of Morro Bay, the water quality of Morro Bay. And so there's a lot of very compelling reasons that a facility like this would benefit our students and our faculty. And so I want to give you the opportunity, if you have any questions about Cal Poly's involvement, but just to say that we are certainly here as a partner with the city and with the aquarium to explore something that we think could be beneficial for the institution. Thank you. Good.
Thank you.
Okay, so just two quick slides before we go on to have the consultant call in and walk you through the feasibility study. Capital Investment Task Force. So it's important to know what would be the next steps. If we do move forward as proposed tonight, it would be vital to develop a case for support. We're talking about a capital campaign. These are some of the things you would do immediately. Designate giving levels, recognitions, and set strict campaign timelines if we're working on a one-year timeline as proposed. It's important to create a transparent process for holding funds in escrow, working with experienced nonprofit financial advisor or the Community Foundation of SLO to guide us in this endeavor. Produce collateral materials, identify prospective donors, retain donor records, report progress frequently to partners, remain focused on the process, but realistic about success. It is a large amount of money. The first thing to raise money for would be the architectural design funding next step. We would need what is this aquarium going to look like? What are the components going to be inside? That's critical to do. The estimated cost in some of our files, as we've been waiting for the process to begin, there was some work done on, you know, estimating this cost. It'd be maybe between $35 and $40, adjusted for $2013 dollars. We do have contacts with firms who do this work, including one that reached out to us today, talking about doing a charrette and beginning this process. Donors must be identified as the first step. Donors for this process would be our first step for the task force. This is likely to take 6 to 12 weeks from the beginning to get a design. So at this point, just wanted to close up my presentation and say we're so grateful for 25 years of marine science education. Central Coast Aquarium is in this county and other places in our region. And also, I'd like to invite everyone to come to our 25th anniversary celebration. Our Catch of the Central Coast event is September 14, and it's going to be in our Ocean Discovery Park in Avila Beach, 5 o'clock. You're all invited. So at this point, I'm going to yes, we're ready? Okay, so we've got our consultant.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, she's here. So Elena Kozlas visited Morro Bay in July and spent about 2.5 days here. She also visited the Avila facility. She met with city staff, tourism staff, chamber staff, business owners, and then also spent some time with us in Avila looking at our current operation. And I'll let her turn over this part of the feasibility study to you. And Elena, I think if we've got about maybe 10 minutes, we've discussed some things maybe twice already. So if you kind of push us through, if you think about a 10-minute window, that would be great. Okay?
You got it. And by the way, are my slides up?
Yes. Yeah, so if you tell me next slide, I'll move your slides forward.
Okay, great. So good evening, everybody from the East Coast. it's a great honor to be speaking to all of you today. You can go to the next slide. So just a little bit of background about Consult Econ. We're economic and management consultants, been in business for well over 25 years. Most of our work comes through word of mouth from past clients and people that we've worked with, as we have an excellent track record with our attendance projections for different projects and have been successful in helping finance many of those projects. And we're one of the leading advisors for both nonprofit and for-profit aquariums around the world. We've done over 800 projects, and get more information on our website or let me know if you want anything additional. Next slide. My past experience is very unique. I actually started building aquariums when I was a kid at my grandparents' lake house, and didn't plan to be in this business at all, but kind of fell into it and began my career working with an aquarium development company, which was a startup out of one of the top aquarium designers in the world, Cambridge Seven Associates, who designed National Aquarium, Tennessee Aquarium, some of the shed expansions, the Genova Aquarium, Osaka Aquarium, and the Lisbon Oceanarium. And I joined the firm when they were building just about to sign a contract with the government of Portugal and to build this project, the Lisbon Oceanarium, which we did in 22 months, on a turnkey basis, and has been open and successful ever since. It's a project that is several hundred thousand square feet and well over 2.5 million gallons. So it's one of the biggest aquariums in the world. So I had a great experience of actually being on site, on a greenfield site and building from scratch through opening. And I continued to work with them throughout the years. I've also worked on the startup operating team for another project in Kuwait. And I joined Consult Econ about 15 years ago and have worked on advising over 150 aquarium projects worldwide. Next slide. So most of you are familiar with the past Morro Bay Aquarium operation. I was very fortunate, as Christine had mentioned, to visit the aquarium before it closed. And was sort of astounded by what I saw. But nevertheless, one thing that I did see, as you can see in some of these photos, was that while I was in there in the middle of the afternoon going to check out the aquarium for $3, there were a bunch of other young people that were also looking for something to do. So I thought that was actually an interesting indicator to me to see who actually wanted to go check it out. Next slide. And as Christine mentioned, I was able to visit the Central Coast Aquarium and was really just blown away by the incredible staff and experiences. These are my photographs from my visit there. This was not planned. These were just other visitors that were there at that time. I was there. And the staff was absolutely incredible in engaging the visitors and getting young people and people of all, children of all ages, including me, very excited about what is going on, off the coast. Next slide. For the purposes of our market and economic feasibility analysis, we made some assumptions. We didn't have very good figures about the existing Morro Bay operation, so just made an estimate that the site or the building was or could be or will be about 4,000 square feet in size with about 7,500 gallons of exhibit water. There's a preliminary description of the project, which is going to be on the next slide, which does include an opportunity and plans for opportunities with Cal Poly. So if we the one key thing is that one thing that I noted to Christine when I was there is that we don't really need to put too much in the aquarium because the aquarium is actually Morro Bay. I mean, I was astounded about the amount of wildlife that was just sort of teeming there, the sea lions, the multiple families of sea otters. I saw pups with their mothers. You know, I couldn't believe it. I've been to Monterey Bay. I work with the Monterey Bay Aquarium. They're one of my past clients, but I've never seen anything like this. So I think that there's an incredible opportunity for the new Morro Bay Aquarium to be a wonderful storefront to get people even more excited about getting out on the water and learning more. Next slide. This is a preliminary project description of or potential description of some of the exhibits that would happen. And one thing that I think that is really wonderful about all of these exhibits is that they are focused on the place. They're focused on Morro Bay. And I think that is fantastic, and that is how it should be, because that it makes many aquariums have been very successful in different markets as they interpret the local fauna and life that exists. And by doing so, they actually become a must-see destination so that people can go there and learn about the natural side of the place they're visiting. And as noted here, there's an expectation right now that it would be wonderful. We obviously welcome very much Cal Poly's partnership, but to have Cal Poly, give them a space for their research vessel off the dock, off the back of the aquarium, and also, use the aquarium for the potential of also being a place for facility rentals for people special occasions or meetings in Morro Bay. Next slide. The experience of aquarium developments has been, it's actually now it's an industry. Aquariums have been around for well over 50 years, and in the past 50 years, over 40 freestanding aquariums have been developed in North America alone. So their success has been predicated on solid planning and feasibility, sound business, financial and business plans, good accessible locations and solid markets, and compelling exhibits. Next slide. In addition, one thing to note is that I was just actually talking about this a couple of weeks ago or 2 weeks ago in Manhattan at a building museums conference, that on the spectrum, if you look kind of at a spectrum of those attractions that get the most visitors, right? And one end of the highest end of the spectrum, you have theme parks, which are for profits. At the lower end of the spectrum, you usually have history museums, sadly, or historic sites. Aquariums tend to be of the nonprofit attractions that are also developed as for-profit attractions on the higher end of that range. So they are unlike your typical museums in that because they are exotic, they are compact, they're repeatable, and they have living things in them, they become an extremely, extremely appealing attraction type. Next slide, please. There's been significant economic impact of aquariums, and one proven. One great example is what happened in Baltimore Harbor in Maryland with the aquarium there. That aquarium was actually the impetus for the rest of the city's development. Same thing in Chattanooga, Tennessee with the Tennessee Aquarium. And that project I really love because that one was actually founded as a freshwater aquarium primarily. And the way that it kind of happened was my mentor, the founder of ConsultiCon, Tom Martin, was meeting there with actual local developers. So there was no nonprofit grassroots group. These were developers locally who said, we're going to give $20 million to make this happen. What should we build? And sort of then Tom brought in the architect and so forth and so on. And now Chattanooga, which the aquarium was the spawn of the rest of that town's development, and now Chattanooga is being taught as a model for city planning at Harvard Graduate School of Design. So it's because a lot of other attractions and a lot of other things developed because of the success, and there was an incredible community building that happened, and it's voted as one of the best places to live in the States. And as I mentioned, if, an aquarium talks about its local marine life, that it can become a must-see destination. Next slide. So the costs associated with building an aquarium are typically high in comparison with other attractions. And there's a lot of different financing models. Most aquarium developers rely on a combination of both public and private funding. And the rationale for public funding is based on the benefits that an aquarium provides to its community, including economic development, jobs, educational benefits, conservation activity, and community development. And with economic development, also increased potential length of stay in tourism settings. Next slide. So this slide shows various aquariums' funding mechanisms. Now, there are some exceptions here. I'll call out one of the major aquariums to south of you, the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach. That project took on a loan, they decided to, which was not feasible, and we did not work on that project, to say. But nevertheless, they took out a loan, and then they had to be bailed out by the local government. So, even though now it is doing quite well, I never recommend that a nonprofit attraction take out a loan unless they have a fundraising capability to pay the loan back. But nevertheless, this shows that the orange reflects those projects that included significant public funding. And nevertheless, in some of these other cases, even if the funding wasn't directly in dollars, there is usually, for any successful aquarium, there is some level of public support, whether it means a dollar a year lease for a site or just giving the site outright and so forth and so on. Next slide. I thought this was actually interesting. This slide shows for six aquariums, the split between the visitor market and resident market of their annual visitation. And as you can see, in almost all of these except for the last one, letter F, the blue represents the visitor market. The visitor market is a very critical component to the success of this project. However, you cannot discount the value of residents. Next slide. I'm going to actually skip over these because just due to the limit of time. We did a significant benchmark analysis of similarly sized projects, aquariums. So these are not major aquariums like Monterey Bay or Long Beach. These are smaller projects, one in Santa Cruz to the north that I'm a huge fan of. This is Seymour Marine Discovery Center at UC Santa Cruz. And, of course, the beloved Central Coast Aquarium. Next slide. So as you can see, I think you have to go to the next slide where it says market characteristics and annual attendance. Here you can see that the annual attendance of these projects is rather modest, and that a lot of that has to do just with their locations, their accessibility, the size of the projects, and so forth. Next slide.
Hey, Elena.
This is the sizing analysis. Next slide. Yep.
Could you just tell me what slide you're on right now?
Yes.
The title of the slide you're on?
Forgive me. I am on slide. Please, I'm on selected operating characteristics of benchmarked facilities.
Oh, okay. So the page number is?
18.
15.
I apologize.
Okay, I thought I fast-forwarded through them all.
We can actually just... Okay, great. Let's go to the next slide, which is the site context.
Got
it. The site context, you're all, I believe, in that room, very familiar with it. So let's go to the next slide. One thing that was, whenever we look at markets, it's always really important to look at population density, especially due to the geographic nature of San Luis Obispo County. So this just sort of shows the density. So go to the next slide. We define the resident market for the new Morro Bay Aquarium to be the primary resident market to be the city of Morro Bay and the secondary resident market to be the remainder of San Luis Obispo County less the city of Morro Bay population. So our total market area has about 290,000 people with a pretty good, steady growth rate, about 4.5% over 5 years up to upwards of 300,000 in 2023. Next slide. Your tourism market, also many of you are probably familiar that in 2017 it was reported that there were 800,000 visitors to Morro Bay. It is an incredible destination, as you know, and incredibly beautiful, and what a relief for those living in the on the other side who have extreme heat and need to escape. So it's fantastic, but it's wonderful because it's also a year-round destination. And one thing, just I put up that pie chart, so I hope this was great, that in Slo County, that almost 90% of visitors are there for leisure and vacation, which is really critical for the new Morro Bay Aquarium. Let's go to the next slide. The major draw, as we know, is the natural beauty of Slo County and the beaches, and then also there's First Castle, which is wonderful. In essence, there's the Museum of Natural History, which is a real gem that I visited. But one thing that I really noted was that, on the Embarcadero, there's the skateboard museum that a gentleman opened, which is a real wonderful place. But it looks like a store. This is my observation. And then the other two projects, the Audubon project and then the other estuary project that are in the building next door upstairs, are lovely, but when I went, they were both closed, so that was a shame. Next slide. So our preliminary attendance potential for the new Morro Bay Aquarium, based upon the market, based upon what we know of Morro Bay in the area, Central Coast Aquarium, as well as similar attraction types and similar markets, and based upon the size of the project. The stable year attendance potential for the new Morro Bay Aquarium ranges between 34,000 to 69,000 with a mid-range of 52,000 visitors per year. Next slide. This shows the preliminary net operating income potential of the new Morro Bay Aquarium. Incredible strong earned revenue potential. This includes a mix of strong retail sales of nearly $250,000 a year. And again, that's given the site on the Embarcadero. And as well as the opportunities for events and, admission pricing, of course, a small amount of memberships that might be debatable what's best there. And it has, I think, for the size of the project, an extremely strong earned revenue profile. Operating expenses, these do not assume any rent, and they assume that the director of the Central Coast Aquarium would be the same director of the new Morro Bay Aquarium, just to note. And based upon this model in a stable year in current dollars, the net income is a negative $122,000. This is actually the operating profile. One key factor that we always look at when we're benchmarking aquariums or looking at new projects is the percent coverage of operating expenses by earned revenue. And typically for projects of this type, it can range anywhere between, 40% earned revenue operating expense coverage up to 90% earned coverage. And so 85% is extremely high on that scale, so that's a very positive indicator. Contributed revenue component needed for break-even operations in a stable year is $122,000. This is very typical for any nonprofit operation, just as Christine explained earlier with Central Coast Aquarium's operation. And so it's part of all nonprofit aquarium operations. And so the sources and the amounts of contributed revenues can vary widely. It could include grants, corporate sponsorships, annual gifts, gifts in kind of goods and services, fundraising events, endowment proceeds, and government support. And in some cases, if the project site or the building is owned by a city or a county or a province, then there are some services that are provided by the public entities in kind to help to defray some of the operating costs for the nonprofit providing a socioeconomic benefit to the community. Next slide. Okay, we already went over this. Next slide. And again, we did go over this, that the capacity of the aquarium to generate 691,000 a stabilized year, mid-range attendance potential is, I believe, very strong. The operating costs are 813,000. The operating costs of aquariums are, you know, do tend to be higher than other museums just because of the nature of having to maintain live animals. But what's wonderful is Central Coast Aquarium is poised and ready because they are already doing such an excellent job of that in the Villa Beach. Let's go to the next slide. One thing that I'd like to talk about a little bit are the community and economic development benefits of the new Morro Bay Aquarium. And these benefits could likely have the most profound and long-lasting impacts on the Morro Bay community. So some of these include, I'm just going to go through these quickly, expanded formal and informal education opportunities, both on and off-site. Next slide. It can create new opportunities for research and development and potential spin-off enterprises. And this we could potentially assume could happen with Cal Poly, but also potentially with other entrepreneurs and companies. Next slide. Next bullet. Catalyst for redevelopment of the Embarcadero and the expansion of cultural activities and offerings. I do believe that the new Morro Bay Aquarium is really a bird in hand development opportunity because one thing that I knew and what was there, I love Morro Bay. It's a very special place and I love the energy and the people and I mean the physical nature of it is sort of mind blowing. It's one of the most beautiful places I've seen in the world and I've traveled a lot. But one thing that really is, I'm not your typical tourist, but I'm more your nature tourist, that the Embarcadero has a lot of retail on it. And that's great because it's great because it's a wonderful tourist activity, but then there wasn't sort of enough of a balance, I thought, with cultural offerings, such as, you know, some of those young people like me who were looking to learn a little bit more about the wildlife of this incredible teeming bay of, you know, of animals and birds. And when you get inside to that old Morro Bay Aquarium, it was a real downer. So I think that it would be a great opportunity for the city to have such a resource and development like the Morro Bay Aquarium Embarcadero to really help to complement, not compete with the retail offerings and hotel offerings, but really be an incredible asset. Next slide. On that front, the new Morro Bay Aquarium could support the expansion of the visitor con infrastructure. It would help to create a critical mass of visitor attractions in Morro Bay and significantly enhance the visitor profile bay and the tourism economy. Of residents of Morro Bay. Next slide. This is my last slide, and this just basically shows, Christine had alluded that, you know, sort of there's a designer potentially on board and the time that we would need to help with a concept. This is a typical project planning process for a nonprofit aquarium or attraction. And we're really now in this market and financial feasibility phase. So it's sort of after strategic planning, that next chunk. And what we're missing is really the architectural and interpretive planning. And then also, I think what's also been in the works is kind of, this is part of that in this meeting, is understanding some of the fundraising capacity for the project. And both the business planning and fundraising capacity continue all the way through the opening of the new project. And again, I'm very bullish about this project simply because, you know, again, you have the aquarium in the bay and what an incredible storefront for that with a new aquarium. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. And with that, that ends the presentations. Thanks for your patience. And then I'm going to ask Elena to stay with us for Q&A, and I will be here as well. But if you have questions for Elena, might be good to get those to her first, since she is back east.
Indeed. And thank you, Elena. We heard you loud and clearly. We appreciate that. With that, I will go to council questions, and after that, I'll open it up to public comment. So I'll start with questions for Elena, and if you have none for her, this would be on the feasibility study in particular, and then we'll go to general questions for any of those that presented, including staff. So questions for Elena. Councilmember McPherson.
Okay, I'll start. Hello and welcome and thank you. I didn't realize we were going to get three presentations this evening, but we appreciate all of it. Great information. I wanted to thank Christine for spending about an hour and a half on the phone with me on Saturday, so I had quite a few questions for her. But I'm going to focus on you, Elena, so thank you very much for being with us. From the benchmarking data that you provided, it would appear that your analysis of how much you're going to be able to cover with earned revenue with your operating expenses is fairly high at 85%, and the average seemed to be quite a bit lower, and even the benchmarking aquariums that you included were lower. So can you give me the basis for that optimistic assessment? And how realistic is it, do you think?
Absolutely. Sure, absolutely. So the one thing with the benchmark projects is that we were not able to get some of the data for Woods Hole and for UC Santa Cruz and Save the Bay. And for those, I'll say one thing. There's no perfect benchmark, right, to any project. So the one thing, the reason why our numbers are so much more, or our duration much higher, is because Morro Bay is a prime waterfront, oceanfront destination. And a lot of, and Central Coast Aquarium is, however, the Central Coast Aquarium is, even though it's located on a beach, the Morro Bay Aquarium site is right on the Embarcadero, on sort of like what I'd like to think of as the tourist main street. So the site could not be better. So that is, in of itself, is a significant reason for why that coverage ratio is better. It's because your attendance potential is so much better, and your opportunity for events and the revenue is much higher because of also the incredible views that you would have. A lot of these other aquariums are not designed or in tourist destinations that allow for that or have limitations. They are run by universities.
Seem to have lost contact. So we'll pause. They're making a. Do you have any questions for anybody else you want to throw in, Mother? Or you want to?
I can wait for other people.
We'll see how long it takes to hear back. That is.
Hello?
Yeah, we lost you for a moment, Elena. Yes. Hello? Can you hear us?
Okay,
go ahead.
Sorry. Yes, I can hear you now. Where did I lose you?
I think you'd primarily answer the questions. You think we have a great location here that will attract a lot of people, and that's one of the main reasons for your optimistic assessment.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely, Councilmember Pearson, that's right. And primarily, it's because a lot of these other aquariums that were benchmarked don't have the gem of the site that you, even the Seymour Center at UC Santa Cruz, beautiful site, but it's on a college campus, a university campus. So it's kind of, you have to go through gates to get, you're literally on B Street in Morro Bay, Torres. So that's the primary reason.
Okay.
Is the site.
One more question for you.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, you did. I have another question for you. Is it possible for you, based on your experience and the work you've done with other aquariums, to tell us about how much more revenue the city could expect from a project of this type? I'm thinking of the TOT tax and the sales tax, which are our two primary sources here in the city. How many more tourists would you think we would draw based on this attraction?
Okay. Oh, that's a really good question. You know what? It's hard to say because the it may be, because this aquarium is a smaller, more modest sized aquarium, it's not, it's likely it will definitely attract a different type of tourist, maybe, if people know it's there, and would, but very much likely extend the length of stay, I believe. That if, and so I can't give you a distinct number of the number of tourists. We can take that on, that kind of a study. But right now, the estimate of attendance assumes that over 80% of the, of those 52,000 visitors in a stable year are going to be tourists. I would likely, let me think, we do economic impact studies all the time. I mean, I would love to say we could at least, we could definitely attract a couple more thousand people, if not more than that, because of this cultural offering. And that what happens is when you have a critical mass of cultural offerings and a tourism destination, it becomes more appealing to people who know that on a rainy day they have something to do, that there's something beyond just going to the stores, that there is, now you have the new Maritime Museum, which is modest but still a wonderful addition to the Embarcadero. And I know that the Museum of Natural History doing some instruments, which is great. But again, to have something right on your main street, aka Embarcadero, I think it's hard for me to answer that member, Council Member Pearson, without doing a little bit of analysis on that. But I would definitely say it would have the ability to attract new tourists. How many, I am too conservative to give a number specifically, but would like to think at least several thousand.
Okay, thank you. This is my last question for you. Can you explain why you're so opposed to taking out a loan, which was, of course, the original idea of for financing?
Yeah, I only because of what I've seen, that putting the burden on paying back a loan, right, of several million dollars for a project, and the fact that it's a nonprofit attraction. It's just contradictory. It just doesn't pencil out. It would basically put the Morro Bay Aquarium in constant fundraising and wouldn't be able to really fulfill the mission, really, of education and being a community resource. So it really would limit that. What I did speak to the Central Coast Aquarium was that getting a loan is actually wonderful to get the project built, and just in combination with fundraising commitments. So a lot of times when we're building new aquarium projects, you're not going to get all the money. The cash flow doesn't exactly line up with what your fundraising cash flow is. So there is a loan taken to help to pay that back. Now, the Frost Museum of Science in Miami, they got a lot of money from the county, and they actually did need to get some loan. They did need to get a loan to help them to open the project. Now, that's, over $300 million project. This project's much more modest. It really goes to what the fundraising capacity is. However, I just want to go back to the second question that you had for a moment. The one thing that, and we would be happy to prepare an economic impact analysis of the new Morro Bay Aquarium, which would then basically, we could analyze and provide a number of how many more tourists. But one thing that I do believe the new Morro Bay Aquarium would do is would increase length of stay, and and support repeat visitors that would then be spending money in the restaurants on the street and in retail shops. So it's not just an economic benefit in terms of to the aquarium and in some cases to the city, but also to the other fellow community leaders and owners. So the loan is just a, I believe it's just, it's a risk factor for a nonprofit aquarium. That's all.
All right. Thank you. Thank
can
you.
It be done? Sure. But I would, but I think it's a risk.
Thank you very much for answering my questions. That's all.
Other questions for
you're welcome.
The consultant while we have her on the phone? No? Yes. Councilmember Addis?
Hi, Elena. I first want to thank the CCA staff for showing up this evening and staying so late, and the director, members of the board, and the public for sharing your views on this project. It's important for the City Council to hear from you and to see you, so thank you for that. I don't know if this question is specific to Elena, but it's about parking. And I know that it seemed like your report, Elena, shows the aquarium to be successful even with existing parking, which is somewhat limited, and there's been some feedback about that. And so I was wondering if you could talk about, just talk about that a little bit, if you really truly feel like we are okay with existing parking.
Very good question. I am a bit concerned about the parking, I'll be honest with you. But the good thing is that most of the visitors are already there, here. And those new ones that are going to come, it is an issue. There are those 11 spaces, and there is the metered parking or the parking on Embarcadero. But, yes, I would feel much more comfortable if we did have a parking, you know, an option for parking, even if it's on site and we could shuttle people over, which is what's done. I know in Chattanooga at the Tennessee Aquarium, they actually have a free shuttle bus, and I know you have a shuttle bus. So there's options that I think could be, forgive me, I don't remember if you have a shuttle bus. Do you have a shuttle bus?
We have a trolley. That operates.
Yes,
seasonally,
thank you. The trolley.
Right?
That's what.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think that through the trolley system and that mechanism, that would be an amazing support as long as we could supply some kind of parking in the vicinity. And you know, I agree that is potentially an issue. However, it shouldn't be the driving issue because I think there are ways to defray that because. And the Embarcadero is such a destination in of itself, as is the bay. So the issue is really length of stay, right? So the longer people stay at a parking spot creates parking problems, right? So in that sense, it would be definitely something that we would need to consider.
And then my other question was about partnerships with private vendors and if you've worked with other aquariums that do that, such as the local boat tour, water sports operators, or if this would be a new, unique Morro Bay venture.
Oh, no, that's absolutely, that is actually what's done at many aquariums. One of them, the Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium in Florida, actually, which is not far from where I am right now, they partner with a local tour boat company, and they provide either a docent on the boat for the educational wildlife tours, or they train the staff. So the staff of the boat company are actually trained by Moat Aquarium staff to give the tours. And the tickets are sold right at the aquarium. And I think that's an incredible opportunity for Morro Bay. We did a study for the Monterey Bay Aquarium looking at, you know, vertical integration. How could they increase their revenue potential? And one of those projects was their, they have an offsite, a boat program also. I think one of them, their research one is theirs, but I think there's another one that they partner with another local group. So there is a precedence in other communities. And the Save the Bay, which is one of the benchmarks, their little aquarium in Newport, Rhode Island, they actually, they do, it's really cool, they do seal tours, which are sold out in summer months. It's basically a cruise, you know, talking about Narragansett Bay and letting people see seals, you know, as they're sort of perched on the rock. So, yes, I just to answer your question, I did do a tour also with
an operator that currently partners with the Central Coast Aquarium. So Central Coast Aquarium currently does run aquarium programs in the harbor. They bring some of their classes over, and they have a deal already with one of the local tour boat operators. And they bring their naturalist on board with the tour boat operator, and they conduct a tour that way, and they do a revenue share.
Thank you.
So I think that's an incredible opportunity. And the idea is not to take away business from the current existing operators and not to compete with them, but to help to support them and to add additional offerings.
Great. Thank you, Elena. I have no questions for you. I appreciate the time. I know it's a little bit later for you there, so we'll let you get to the night show. Thank you again for being here. Christine, any comments for Elena? Yeah. Thank you. We'll disconnect from you. Appreciate it. We'll move to council questions.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Council questions generally for any of the presenters and or staff. Looking to my right, none? Okay. Yes, ma'am. Councilmember McPherson. Thank you.
Could you, you and or Dean, speak to the nature of the collaboration with Cal Poly? I think the staff report or suggested you may have a partnership. Just to understand better where you're at in that partnership at the moment.
Sure. Well, I'll speak to what we currently have, and then. Maybe, Dean, if I've missed something or you want to elaborate, that would be great. And maybe if we ask all the Cal Poly questions at one time, Dean can come up here and do that.
Okay.
So I'll just intro that, and then maybe he'll stay here and you can ask those. So currently we have an MOU with Cal Poly that they provide all of our fresh water. Our fresh water, yes. We have a closed system in Avila. In other words, we don't pull water in from anywhere. We get it from the Cal Poly pier. We drive out. We fill a water truck, and we bring it in, and that is our partnership. So without that partnership and without our ability to go to the pier and to use the water that they have a permit to intake and then to outfall, we wouldn't be able to operate our aquarium. So that is critical to our existence, is to have that partnership. And then, of course, we have internship partnerships, and we get many interns from a variety of colleges that help with the aquarium process. And then, of course, Dean's on our board. We have many professors that do our guest speakers for us and our advisors. The peer folks who manage the pier, they're very, very helpful to us in terms of our systems. They have systems, too, on the pier, right? So they have many aquarium tanks, and we do, too, so they're assisting in that way. So that's an example of an existing a contract that we couldn't do without. But just while I'm on the sense of water, I also want to address this just right away. Aquariums have closed systems. So if you have an aquarium in Oklahoma City, you're not pulling water and water from a pipe somewhere, you know, out of the Gulf of Mexico or something. So there's locally, so you know our system, and we use fresh ocean water from the bay in Avila. But in Cabrillo High School Aquarium, which is one of only two high school aquariums in the U.S. It's in Lompoc. We recently visited there, the CCA staff and I, and they make their own salt water, which is how many landlocked aquariums operate. So this project on the Embarcadero in Morro Bay is not dependent on any kind of an intake or outfall permit, because we're operating now without that system. So it's just an option we can consider. So maybe it removes something, maybe it decreases cost a bit, and certainly maybe some permitting issues would be easier if we didn't, you know, want to put a pipe in the bay. Dean.
Sure. So I could speak to, I did it briefly, you know, about what the collaboration could look like moving forward. Is that of interest?
Yes. Okay. And how committed at this point you believe Cal Poly to be to continuing a partnership of some kind?
Very committed to continuing a partnership of some kind. And the nature of that could take on different forms. I could see everything from a situation where we had a teaching space within the aquarium and research lab space within the aquarium. I think that would be on the, you know, one extreme, to extending the kinds of internships and student partnerships and more ad hoc relationships with faculty if a particular project developed where we could use the aquarium. We currently lease floating dock space from the city, and we also lease a boat slip from the estuary program. And that, so we're using resources. We have equipment deployed in the bay, a number of faculty that are studying the ecosystem. So there's a lot of incentives for us to have access to a facility there. Okay. I could see faculty writing into grant proposals the use of space within the aquarium. And so it doesn't exist, so they don't think about that now. But if that did exist, I could absolutely see faculty writing in, rental space within their grant proposals to do work on the bay and in the facility. So that does happen. We pay, other entities to utilize facilities. So all of that exists, and what it looks like depends on how it develops. Certainly Cal Poly is committed to exploring this and has been, when this first became something we were talking about, we've been there to participate.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any more questions for Dean.
I have one.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about your vision for Cal Poly and the task force, like what your role might be or what that could look like?
Think that we need to be represented on the task force, if that is visionary enough. I think that we are a key player in this, and there are a lot of existing partnerships, both with the city and with the aquarium, that makes it it makes perfect sense that we would participate as an active member on that. That committee, and I don't know who that would be. Could be me as a board member and as the dean of the college who administers the Center for Coastal Marine Sciences. It could be a faculty member. I'd want to get the right person participating, and maybe it would be a few people, but certainly we should be at the table.
Okay. Continue with any general questions that you might have.
Okay, I will. I think this one is possibly for Christine. Do you have any idea about how much the aquarium will cost? I noticed that, originally you were seeking a $20 million loan, and now you're talking about raising $5 to $10 million. Is that about the range that you believe it will cost?
So to clarify the USDA loan, it was up to $20 million. So it was, we had the ability to go that high, but that wasn't anything that was the intention. And Elena, the consultant from Consult Econ, she gave us the estimate of $1,000 per square foot. So if you multiply that times the size of the facility, it's minimum $4 million. But the site will need remediation and likely has other issues if we're talking about scraping it and building from the ground up. So in addition, something that's really important to the Central Coast Aquarium Board, and honestly me as well, as the executive director, is that within the fundraising we do have a operational endowment to cover some of that $120,000 deficit. You heard Dean talking about different entities that Cal Poly has agreements with. So obviously we walking through the process, creating a facility that's beneficial for our use, for the city, and also for Cal Poly. That there would be that perhaps a contracted ability to pay into something which would reduce the operating funds. So, but at this point, the USDA loan, it's no longer necessary. Well, it's no longer feasible based on the consultant, but also the USDA on the visit here, a site visit they had several months ago, they really would not give the actual loan to Central Coast Aquarium. They would want to give the loan to another entity, and in this case it would be the City of Morro Bay, and that really isn't a great option for the city.
Okay. And what is your strategy for raising the money in a year?
Oh, great. So I've got my slides back up, but I'm not sure. Oh, well, we addressed that a little bit in the slides. If maybe AGP, someone doesn't mind coming out and helping me get the slide back up so you all can see it. So, basically here's the capital investment task force idea. You just basically have to hit the ground running as soon as possible with making sure you're hitting all those marks. And then the very first thing we would do is, in order to have something to show people, we would have to raise the funds for the architectural design. So there are several individuals through this process that have reached out to me at the Central Coast Aquarium and said they are interested in talking about a large gift or funding. You know, who knows where it will go, but there was no way I could have a conversation with them until we had this meeting and I understood exactly what the partnerships were, because we need to have a city participate for it to make sense.
So the first goal would be the design, and then that would help to make future fundraising possible.
Exactly, right, because we did have 30,000 people, or $30,000 raised from about 50 people in the community on the idea of paying for a feasibility study, which is basically, you know, your name's not on the feasibility study, but to increase our odds of having large philanthropic gifts, and you do have to have a vision that is also something that can be seen and experienced by a potential donor.
And what happens if you can't raise that difference between your operating expenses and your revenue?
Honestly, we are very committed at the Central Coast Aquarium to move forward with this funding in place. But if it's something where we're going to have to squeeze or fudge or maybe make it, we just are not able to commit to that. We're already running an entity in Avila that's doing quite well and that we're working towards sustainability on, but without the full funding in place for what we believe we need, we just won't be able to execute the project.
And do you see any competition between the Morro Bay Aquarium and the Avila Beach Aquarium?
You know, it's interesting. Now, being a Morro Bay resident and having some experience in Morro Bay issues, and then now working in Avila for nearly a year, it's very different feel. 200,000 people, they say, come to Avila Beach. It's hard to find. It's a little bit off the beaten path. You pretty much pull from people in South County. So in terms of the foot traffic, it doesn't have Highway 1 going right through it. It doesn't have people driving, you know, to go to Big Sur and back. So that foot traffic's just not there. And then you can see in the slide I discussed, we are really impacted by the size of our footprint in order to reach as many school students as want to come. So we could have a program, you know, of course they only come during the school year and they only come really in the spring, although we push them to come to the fall. They do visit in the fall, but really it's a spring thing. We can do programs really. We could expand so much more. We could change up the programs, do elementary programs in Avila, middle school, high school programs in Morro Bay. You know, there are plenty of kids to reach.
Thanks.
I'll just take general questions for any of the presenters or for staff. Further questions? Go ahead.
If you could flesh out your vision a little bit of the task force. Same question that I asked Dean.
Right. So what I envision is let's say we move forward. Immediately I will need three letters of support from the Central Coast Aquarium chair. I'm likely to get that one easiest. But then I would need a letter from either signed by the mayor of the city of Morro Bay, and depending upon Dean, either Dean, the provost, or the president for Cal Poly, to immediately move forward. Because what I would want to do is make the outreach immediately to places like Monterey Bay Aquarium. Maybe they want to have a satellite. Maybe they're ready to have some kind of a collaboration. Maybe going, you know, Scripps in San Diego, places that are Santa Cruz, things that are tied to educational, you know, a mission that's educational very, very closely. But I will need collateral to do that. So I will need someone to write me a letter and sign it. And then if indeed it is like, hey, yeah, come and talk to us, or a donor says, I'd like to talk to you about it, I will go. Someone from Cal Poly will go, as Dean and I discussed, but who will go from the city of Morro Bay? Who's the person that you could see going to a meeting with a donor? Is it staff person? Is it a council member? Is it a community member that you nominate? How do you do that? But it's not as impactful to be in front of a donor asking for a significant gift if you don't have all the players at the table. And if somebody who's significantly responsible for, you know, bringing the information back and having some assurance that it will get to the right place. So I'd like for someone tonight to be my contact person moving forward, if we decide to move forward. That's up to you.
And then it seemed like a lot of the success is pending on changing exhibits, like being able to have rotating exhibits. And so does CCA currently have experience with that? Has it been successful? Do you see that as being successful?
Where the truth is that our space in Avila doesn't allow for us to bring in a big traveling exhibit, right? So we're our two-room aquarium and our upstairs classroom. So we have, the way we've been addressing that is with new and exciting animals. So we're getting new and exciting animals coming to the collection all the time. So recently we've been celebrating. We have swell sharks that are mating like crazy, and they're laying lots and lots of eggs, and the embryos take 9 months to develop, and they're wiggling in there, and we did a press release because that's pretty interesting, right? Previously, you may have seen, we had, and we get the, we have very good relationships with fishermen. They give us things like spot prawns, they donate, they find giant Pacific octopuses, which they're not happy about, but if they're the right size, they know our team and what we're looking for, they'll donate one. We'll keep it for a short amount of time. We'll focus on its needs and its enrichment, and then we'll return it. Maybe you saw there was a story made out on KSBY, thanks to Len on the Papagallo. We were able to return Joan, our octopus, to the Pacific in October. So those are the things that we would consider a traveling exhibit. So it really would be an animal experience that's unique. And then, you know, every animal is interesting, but that's what we would do. In Morro Bay, it would be likely similar, depending upon the partnerships, because of the space we have. But we could also use a place like the Vets Hall, for a temporary exhibit if we wanted to do something. We could think about partnerships like that, but space is always going to be a limitation.
And then currently, I know you have birthday parties down at CCA, other kinds of events, because that seemed to be a huge piece financially as well. So
right.
Besides birthday parties and weddings.
Right, so we do rent out our facility for Brighton. Now, the majority of rentals are birthday parties. And, you know, we have somebody who's turning 30 and she wants to have a party there. We say yes. The impetus for creating the outdoor discovery park in Avila is to then use it for our programming during the day and then to have it be a rental space. And it's a unique place because it's right steps from the beach and has a beautiful view. And we can offer a tour of the aquarium as part of someone's event rental. We already have a rehearsal dinner scheduled for September 2019, and we don't have the gates on yet, so we're a little bit nervous, but already we're seeing benefits to us in Avila would be that we have the Avila Beach Golf Resort right next door, and they have a lot of events. Also, wedding venues. This is a very popular place to come and get married. Many Cal Poly students return, or people just find us, and it's very limited, the places that you can have for your event. So as soon as that facility is complete, then we're going to begin to market it. It would be very similar in Morro Bay. I don't know if any of you have been to the aquarium second floor, the existing, the shuttered aquarium, but the view from the second floor, it's stunning of the rock. So that would be an absolute benefit. So for a corporate event or a small gathering, we couldn't do a wedding of 200 people.
Other questions? So I'll reserve my questions because I've spent a lot of time as a task force member with Councilmember Addis, and then prior to that, over the last couple of years, speaking with many of you, including your board members, with Mrs. Johnson recently, a number of times regarding the feasibility study, their operations, and the turnaround that has occurred, as well as Dean Wendt on a number of occasions in the past. So I don't have any further questions. I'll reserve those. And I'm going to open it up for public comment. Thank you for the presentation. First up on public comment, Supervisor Gibson. Welcome.
Good evening, Your Honor, and members of the council. A great pleasure to be with you here. Bringing my strong support for this project and urging you to continue your support and engagement. I bring with me the very strong support of Supervisor Adam Hill, who represents Avila Beach, and where we have seen an extraordinary 25-year track record with the Central Coast Aquarium. They are a stellar attraction in that wonderful beach town, almost, you know, a nice beach town, but not Morro Bay by any measure.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. And I would emphasize there that one of the things I'm particularly attracted to is the partnership that the county has engaged with CCA through the ground lease that we have with them. I think partnership is the key here. You are not going to be going this alone. You've spoken with CCA's interactions with Cal Poly and to a certain extent with the estuary program, but I think you have a wider universe here, especially on the North Coast. You have the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, which operates a small discovery center up in San Simeon Cove that would be a natural partner. Obviously, your visitor serving interests, particularly your TBID, your business improvement districts for the visitor serving industry, would be natural allies in this. And you certainly have my strong commitment of support and Supervisor Hill's as well. We were the two funders of the county's contribution to that feasibility study, and we think that this will be an extraordinary project for a whole variety of reasons that you've talked about. And with that, I will spare you further commentary from me and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sure. Supervisor, for being here this evening. Appreciate it. Next up is Ken Twist. Welcome, Ken.
Your Honor, City Council members, thanks for the ability to come up here and comment. I would like to recommend is having a business on the Embarcadero that's waterborne, and having been on the board of the Maritime Museum and seeing what that has been able to grow to and how that's been able to profit over the last year or so. I would recommend the city partner with the CCA and Cal Poly in moving forward with this endeavor for a few reasons. One, it does the spirit of the endeavor does lend itself to bringing more recreational activities and educational activities so tourists and locals alike can benefit from the natural beauty that's right here in the estuary. And partnering with Cal Poly, I think, is spot on because then you have academic research that can occur. You can have other businesses or, you know, who knows what will spawn from this idea. So I think it's going to be a great partnership. Secondly, the current building in its current form, it's since the aquarium is gone, we've noticed a tremendous decline in people moving to the south side of that Embarcadero. So it does have an impact, and I think having a facility like this would be a great anchor tenant to that area to kind of widen the tourism in the Embarcadero. So that's all I'd like to say. And I'd like to thank the CCA and Cal Poly for their very thoughtful presentation and analysis. I thought it was it was spot on. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And next up is Bill Martoni. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening again. Bill Martoni, Morro Bay. A couple years ago, number one, I totally support the aquarium in Morro Bay. But a couple years ago, I talked about the location being different for the aquarium, and that is the existing building that the city owns, the Breakers. Is a building that I think is due to be demolished if you go through with a project, you know, as far as a convention center and out in that area. That would be a perfect building for the aquarium. It could stay in place. It would, if it's $5 million to build an aquarium on a 50-foot lot on the Embarcadero, you have spectacular views. You have an existing historic building. It would also pull the downtown in the Embarcadero, which is the intent. So it would be a magnet to pull both sides together. And I think it should rethink using the Breakers as a site location for the aquarium. It would make it much more feasible economically, and I think it would be a better fit. You actually right now have a 83-unit motel being built by the high school. There's a 30-unit motel going through next to the Blue Sail. There's motel rooms on the Embarcadero. And you also have a convention center at the inn at Morro Bay. So I'm not saying that a convention center, you may even be able to piggyback both, but that building I don't think should be demolished. And then you would also pick up the $3,000 a month income from that lease site that you're currently losing. So you could operate the Cal Poly, you could save the water lease sites. You could either refurbish that existing building on the Embarcadero for something else or do something else there. But I think a 50-foot postage stamp for what they're talking about is too small. Plenty of parking up at the Breakers, up and down, and I just think it's a much better fit. And maybe you should reconsider it, and it would be probably more feasible to actually pull this project off, and they wouldn't have to go in debt. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Next up for public comment is Don Mariska. Welcome, Don.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Mayor, members of the council and of the community here, I just want to speak to the strong support that I've seen in the community for this program. Since 2003, I've been facilitating discussions of interests across the marine area, fishermen, environmentalists, business people, et cetera, here in Morro Bay. And there's been, right from the start, a very strong interest in what could be done to have a better interpretation of the marine environment. So I've seen 15 years of interest around this. You may recall when we were doing the local economic action program, the LEAP program, that was one of the ideas that actually emerged from the community. They put it up on the wall. We want to do this. So I see strong support for that. On a personal level, I just say that I believe in this enough that my wife and I give a small donation as visionary donors to the feasibility study, even before the feasibility was done. Because as an entrepreneur, I see lots of opportunities here. I even see people coming up to me in the community, a friend who's going to Cal Poly and works in the kayak shop. He dives around where the aquarium is. He says there's wonderful things to see down there. We could have an eye on the bay. And people could actually see what's going on and around the bay and how it shifts when the currents come in and out and different fish and other things go about. So I just see a lot more opportunity even than the feasibility study highlights. I think the idea that Christine was highlighting about potential collaborations, art museums are doing this where they're having roving exhibits that go from big museums to smaller ones. I think the idea of working with Julie Packard and trying to figure out something with the Monterey Bay Aquarium would be very, very exciting and could create some real links for us. We could have, you know, the Bay After Dark down there where we'd, you know, beam in researchers from around the world that are doing interesting things, tracking tuna, you know, that are coursing the world. And I think programming is going to be a key thing here. Right now, the Avila facility is great. I love going there. But it is really oriented in scale and character to kids. We could have a much more interesting and engaging facility. We could have programming that would have a schedule to it. I've noticed that that's what they do in Santa Cruz, so that people would actually schedule and want to stay longer in Morro Bay. That's what we really need. We need people to stay overnight, you know, not just sort of breeze in and breeze out. And if there was a schedule of very exciting things and people said, hey, I want to come because on Saturday morning I want to be able to go to this, boom, you pick up a Friday night stay and hopefully, you know, a Saturday night as well, and we've really turned our economics around. I'd really encourage the council to assign one or two council members to this endeavor. I've had great experience working with Dean Nguyen in the past. I know he really delivers and can deliver greatly for Cal Poly. Don't want to overextend you, Dean, but I've seen what he's done to really expand that program. And with only 1 year, that's a very short time to raise this money. If you've ever been involved in capital campaigns, that's pretty darn short. And I think we really need to have champions. We need champions from you. So I encourage you to participate and support it and hope that you will. Thanks.
Thank you, Don. Very much appreciated. Public comment is still open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, feel free to do so at this time. From the far end of the building, I do see... Welcome.
My name is Bob Keller, Morro Bay, Mayor, Council, and Staff. The aquarium for Morro Bay is a natural. This is like a no-brainer. But anyway, I'm kind of agreeing with what everybody said, and I'd like the council to move forward with this Morro Bay aquarium market and economic feasibility study. So just move on with this. It's one of the best things that we could ever have in Morro Bay. Thank you. I'll make it quick.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate that. Public comment is still open. Ah, we do have another taker. Welcome.
Hi, thank you, Mayor Hedding and fellow council members and staff. My name is Jen Ford. I'm a local resident. I'm also an early education teacher. And I have this huge, long thing written out here, but I think everything I have written here has been said numerous times. So I'm going to give you just a little glimpse into what it's like to be an early education teacher here in Morro Bay and the experience that I've had with my young students. During the summer, we go on little field trips with elementary school age kids and kindergartners and transitional kindergarten age, which is 4, 5-year-old kids. And the experience we've had is we take our students out to the beach. We explore the tide pools. We do little mini field trips here and there. And the amount of students that we have that have never stood foot on our beach, on our shores, have put their feet in the sand, it's incredible how many students have no clue as to what is in our backyard and what exists there, whether they see it in person or whether they learn about it in school or in an aquarium. And I just want to say that I think that having an aquarium here locally, of course, it's going to bring in tourism. We want to fill our hotels. We want to fill our restaurants. We want to fill our retail stores. But we also want to educate our local children and our local high schoolers, our local Cal Poly students. And I want to tie this into the letter, Mayor, that you are going to write about the oil trains coming through. This all is tied in because it's our environment. It's our appreciation of the future that our world has and the future for our children. And if our children aren't appreciating our ocean and our ecosystems and our estuaries and what's happening here in our own backyard, how do we see the bigger picture? How do we appreciate the world and what it has and the gifts that it provides and what we need to live and thrive here? So I think that having more educational centers that Christine wants to bring here, I think that the more education we have, the better. We can't have enough education. We really can't. We could fill every city with educational facilities, and we still won't have enough education. So I encourage you to support the aquarium and bringing it here, and whatever it takes, build that task force. Please include our city council members on that task force. Have a seat at the table for Cal Poly. Have a seat at the table for anyone that we feel will be able to get us to that point to where we can afford to have this facility here, and we can educate our locals and our tourists. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Public comment is still open. Looking around. Seeing no further public comment, I will close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. And I think I'll take the opportunity to take the lead on this issue since I have been involved with this initiative since, as Don Mariska said, the LEAP initiative way back when there was the beginning of a vision cast, and even prior to that when there was the RFP that was sent out prior to my tenure, which led to that LEAP process and concerns for economic development. I am strongly supportive of CCA coming into this community and moving forward with the proposed one-year initiative to really study the potential for not only developing and further defining the concept of what this might look like, but also defining what the economic impact is. I can tell you anecdotally, in having read the feasibility study, that numbers have not been quantified. But if you look at data from other aquariums and other areas, there is a tremendous economic spin-off value to communities that do have aquariums, not only those that have a bay, but those that are on land. And I've actually visited a number of those while traveling across the country and outside of the country. I think the benefits are many. One, to the community, as I said, the educational opportunities for our own children can be expanded. But I also note that CCA has just a wonderful program that draws kids in from outside of the area. And Jen, you made a comment about the fact that many of our own local kids do not see the bay, even though they live right here. I think about the number of Valley kids that come over and are exposed for the first time to the existing aquarium and other aquariums, and are amazed. And who knows what that will spawn in the future with regard to a potential for not only the appreciation of our ecosystem and the ocean environment, but for future educational opportunities. Second, I think this will have a tremendous impact on tourism. I do believe that there will be this will be an attraction that will attract tourists, that will increase length of stay in our hotels. I also believe that there will be spin-off revenues to the community that, again, can be at least initially quantified through the economic impact study. The other thing I want to talk about was really the ocean and the bay, and we've talked about the preservation of this wonderful asset that we have here, and the good fortune that we have to live in a community where we can benefit every day, and I never take it for granted when walking down by that bay, what we have here. And as good stewards of our environment, it behooves us to look for partners that will advance the initiative to preserve and expand the ecosystem. And I do believe that a partnership with CCA would help to accomplish that. I do believe there are multiple partnerships available, such as the National Estuary Program, other potential like Monterey Aquarium, aquariums, etc., and also Cal Poly. And Dean, thank you for your continued engagement on the board. Thank you for your involvement in being here tonight. I'm excited about the educational opportunities to study the Bay, to advance studies for the Bay, to develop adult programs for learning. You know, I could envision, this is my vision, not yours, I know, but I could envision somewhere in the future, you know, extended programs here for classes that would involve students from Cal Poly actually residing and being here for a period of time and studying the Bay. I think that has just a tremendous advantage, brings to us also the possibility of greater philanthropic support. And I don't mean directly from Cal Poly, but just the name association with this does a lot to contribute to the overall goal of reaching the very aggressive one-year plight to raise the money. This has been a long process for us, and for a number of reasons, it hasn't moved as quickly, maybe, as I think we have wanted. However, I will state this. I've seen in the last year a tremendous turnaround operationally in CCA's financials. I know that was a concern that the subcommittee had initially with regard to this. If they weren't operating successfully and relied heavily on endowments, you know, what would that mean? And there's been just a great turnaround. And that's a direct, I think, effect of not only your leadership, Christine, but also your staff and your board of directors. And that leads me to Ms. Kissig. Thank you so much for being here tonight. This was your husband's and your vision many years ago. And whoever thought that it could have possibly ever turned into something like this. So I'm so pleased to have you here in the audience, to have you be supportive of this and to be able to see what may become of that vision that started so many years ago. And I very much appreciate that. I do think the one-year timeline is aggressive. However, it's a timeline that is important to the city because we've got to do something with this asset. I know there are concerns about the concession that might be considered with regard to a dollar rent, but I do believe that when that comes to fruition, if it does and we look at that, that the potential economic benefit that will be quantified through the study that you mentioned will much outweigh what we've seen from a financial standpoint. And I want to point to Supervisor Gibson and thank him and Supervisor Hill for their involvement early on in their partnership as county leaders in the Central Coast Aquarium from the inception, which they have a similar model of support, which has been very successful. And obviously their vision was to see this continue and expand, and it has served the county well, in my opinion. With regard to the staff recommendation, I would support it. And I would add the following caveats. I would like to see four milestones established during the first year. The first milestone that I would look for would be a concept / philanthropic plan presented back to the council within 90 days so that we could have a clear understanding of exactly where we were headed. And that, I believe, would include your economic spinoff plan as well. Two, I would like to see a business marketing plan, which probably is contained in all of the documents that you've presented tonight. But at 180 days, it would be good to know exactly what the pro forma looks like, what the concept is, and what the marketing plan may well be. Third, at 270 days or 9 months, I think a report on the success to date for the philanthropic efforts and the concept plan progress should be made to the council. And then at the very end, the final report with regard to a decision, go, no go, at 1 year based upon all of the information. That builds in accountability for routine check-ins with the council so that we can understand if this looks like it's a favorable thing and potentially will move forward. With regard to the recommendation for involvement locally by either council members or staff, in talking with Ms. Johnson, I do believe and agree that potentially a council member being involved would have significant advantage in going out and seeking philanthropic dollars, so to speak. And it would be my suggestion that the council consider either the existing subcommittee, which does exist, that you've appointed, and or one of the members of the subcommittee to be on that. And if it was your will, you might consider a staff person as well. But I do think it takes council involvement at that level to assist in that. So I'll end with that. I'm very much supportive of this in moving forward. I've outlined for you the four pieces I think that would be appropriate with regard to routine accountability and check-ins. And again, want to thank everybody for their involvement, the board for being here, staff for being here. It's late, I know. Mrs. Johnson, thank you so much for your presentation. Dean Wendt, thank you. And again, Mrs. Kissick, thank you for your vision. I appreciate that. I'll turn it over to my other council members for comments.
I'd like to thank everybody who's here tonight in support of the aquarium. I think we'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in town who does not want the aquarium. Those of you who don't want the aquarium, raise your hand, please. It's a question of how to make it happen, and I think we have all the right people here, all the right groups. I'm more of a let's do something sooner rather than later kind of guy. I'm concerned that this project become a project that typically happens in not just here but in many, many cities where you start out, well, we've got this plan, we want to raise all this money for this new building, let's do some drawings, then we'll do some concept studies. 5 years later, nothing's happened, it ends up on a shelf. I don't want that to happen. Morro Bay has a building. I would like to see Dean Wendt perhaps talk to the folks at Cal Poly and challenge the architectural students to take our existing building and come up with a design. So, well, low-cost design that we can use immediately as the location. Fundraising, I don't want to see you fail. You don't have a track record of raising $5 million in a year. I don't see that happening, to be honest. Why set yourself up for failure? Let's get this thing going quickly on a budget and then see how much money we can raise for a new building. I think the people are here, the synergy is here, the energy is here. We have the building. Let's start tomorrow with what we have right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. And
okay. Well, you know, one of the hardest things that a council member has to decide is the risk versus the benefits. And we've been operating on this project or trying to get this project going for over 5 years. I fully support the idea of an aquarium in Morro Bay, and I hope that we can make it happen, but I do recognize the risks. And the first risk is raising the money in a short period of time, and then also finding a way to make sure that we can keep that project going long term. But I think that we've made so much investment so far, and it's gotten us, and I really do appreciate Christine's efforts, and she has made a huge difference in bringing this project to this point tonight. So I fully appreciate the staff, and I would concur with the staff recommendation. I actually also asked Christine if she wouldn't mind coming back at 6 months to give us a report on where she's at with funding, and you said 9, but I would appreciate an update.
Actually, I said first quarter, half, third quarter,
yes,
and end.
I would support that as an addition to the proposal. And I think it's important that we have council involvement and perhaps even some community involvement. I think the broader the group is that goes to funding, the better. I think we need to show that there's not just Cal Poly and the Central Coast Aquarium and the city behind it, but the communities behind it as well. So I'm ready to move forward with it. And I'm hoping that one of the council members will step up to the plate and volunteer to go along, and if they don't, I will.
Thank you. We get a bunch of that. Thank you. Councilmember Addis, thank you.
Well, I'm very supportive of the project, and I don't have the history on council of going through it. I actually appreciate the one-year timeline. I think it creates urgency around something positive, and I think it creates momentum. I can see the momentum that's been built already by the number of people that sent in letters and that showed up tonight, and I think it's going to be key that those efforts continue and that people continue, especially when it comes to fundraising. So I really appreciate that. I appreciate the partnership with Cal Poly. I see a lot of potential, future potential also to partner with the San Luis Coastal School District, our K-12 schools. We had a teacher show up and talk about how much she already uses the bay and the estuary and partners with CCA for students in her classroom. So I think that's a potential benefit to us. And then thinking about how Cuesta might play a role for all of this. I appreciate the idea of having 4 months milestones or quarterly reporting. I am on the subcommittee. I'd be happy to be part of the task force if the council sees fit for that. And I'm excited by the project. I think we can get it done. I think we have the right players in the room with the right attitude to make it happen.
Great. That's positive. So in summary, there's no motion required for this. This is just staff is looking for input tonight and direction, and I'll just summarize maybe what I've heard. Given on page 92 the conclusion with regard to staff's questions, one, whether or not the city is willing to continue forward with CCA in pursuing this project as outlined in the CCA board action, including the proposed one-year timeline. I think you got a yes with regard to that. It's pretty obvious. Two, if still moving forward with CCA, to what degree will the city partner in and or support capital investment seeking task force as proposed by CCA? We've talked about council involvement. I also would be happy to volunteer as a subcommittee member, and you could, if the rest of the council is okay with that, you could draw on either myself or Council Member Addis as subcommittee members to be involved with the group to seek philanthropic support, if I'm seeing heads nod. And then thirdly, any specific direction to staff, including choosing members, which I just talked about on the proposed task force. But I also incorporated in the milestones that we'd like to see. And if I need to repeat those, I can. Do you need those again, Madam Clerk? You've got those? Good. And then also Council Member Heller's comments about using Cal Poly to assist with design and support, and if possible, starting sooner than later, start now. And I you know, that's an important concept. I know that financially there are issues with that because of the needed renovation of the building and the issues there from a financial standpoint to be able to do that. But I just wanted to make sure that we captured that that comment. So with that, did I get everything that I think I heard? Think we good? Staff, are you clear on that? It looks like our city attorney has a comment.
Mr. Mayor, I would suggest that if we are going to have some milestones, maybe have a formal motion just to approve those as a request to the parties to adhere to the timeline that's proposed.
Okay, I'd be happy to make a motion then. I would move that we move forward with CCA in pursuing this project as outlined in the CCA board action, including the proposed one-year timeline, to include four milestones. One, concept/philanthropic plan presented back to council within 90 days. Two, business marketing plan presented back to council at 180 days. Three, report on philanthropic concept plan progress at 270 days. And four, final report at the end of 1 year with regard to further decisions on moving forward. Second part of the motion is to appoint Council Member Heading and Addis, who are the existing subcommittee members, to be involved as the chosen members to participate in the proposed task force. I'll take a second if there's a second.
Second.
Hey, any further discussion? Not? Roll call vote.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
The motion carries 4-0-1 with Councilmember Davis absent.
Thank you, folks, for being here tonight. With that, we will take a 3-minute health break and be right back. Okay, we are back. Wait for, and we are back. Thank you. We're moving on to item C2, consideration to authorize submittal of a grant application to San Luis Obispo County Continuum of Care for a homeless emergency aid program grant in the amount of $285,300 with potential one-time cost of $34,700 to the city and potential annual cost to the city of up to $20,000 if grant is awarded. Turn it over to Mr. Collins. Mr. Collins, item C2.
Yes, thanks, Mayor, Council Members. To be brief here, Mayor gave a good encapsulation of the agenda item before you, so I'll get right into it. You should have copies of the PowerPoint. So the Homeless Emergency Aid Program was created last year by an act of the state signed by the governor to create emergency funding in the amount of $500 million and one-time funding to address the increasing homeless crisis in the state of California, which currently houses about 25% of the country's homeless population, and that number continues to grow. The funding would provide direct funding to the counties through their continuum of care programs. And an estimation is that the city of SLO, well, actually, they have received $4.8 million. There's broad use of these funds. It's pretty much uncharacteristic of the state to provide such a flexible approach where it can be both programmatic and capital, because I think they finally understand the gravity of the situation and have had enough gumption to move forward with something like that. The recipients of the grants must spend their funds within by the year of 2021, again, to demonstrate the urgency to make sure that those are actually those funds are put on the street and not kind of held up by the bureaucracy. In terms of some of the eligibility requirements to apply for these funds, the cities or other jurisdictions would have to declare a shelter crisis, and the city of Morro Bay did that back in November. Again, beyond that, the city's homeless population, back in 2017, a point-in-time survey was conducted by the county. Countywide, approximately 1,125 individuals were identified through that one-day survey. 36 were identified in Morro Bay. Since that time, staff and other nonprofit or service providers in the city have said that number is probably closer to 50 to 70 individuals, and that number tends to fluctuate depending on the season. And I think you've heard tonight from Linda Fidel, last Monday or yesterday, 85 individuals participated in the Monday Night Dinner, which has been going on for several years. It's a great program, primarily serves low-income, and a lot of the folks who attend are homeless or living in their cars. And, so that kind of corroborates that number of 50 to 70 individuals. As it relates to the declaration of heap funds, with the city declaring the emergency shelter, you gain immunity on certain codes regarding emergency housing, and eligible to apply for the HEAP funds. Can be applied to capital projects and services. The first round of awards, we had in January, but now we're looking a little bit more into May of 2019. And applications must demonstrate local collaboration, and we have a great history of that through EBAC and through our community services resource connection. Shannon Larry is here. She's been fabulous working on behalf of the city and nonprofit service providers and connecting those who need help to the proper services, and has been really, really key in this endeavor. Council declared the crisis back in November, directed staff to return with ideas for a grant submittal. Councilmember McPherson took it upon herself as the EBAC representative to conduct outreach to nonprofits, service providers, connect with Shannon O'Leary, and including Monday Night Dinner coordinators and the faith community. Through that effort, the idea came forward to look at the Vets Hall. We know we have very much severe needs to upgrade the Vets Hall in many ways, and how we can kind of put that together with the needs of the Monday Night Dinner and a need for a temporary warming center during the winter months. So that became the impetus to move forward with the HEAP application. Let's see. Next, the grant application. Basically, what we'd be requesting is funding of approximately $280,000 to $300,000. I think Councilmember McPherson can provide more of an update on that. The application is due March 19th of this year. A significant portion of the funds that we'd be seeking would support Vets Hall improvements, the roof, half of the costs, new restrooms and added showers to those restrooms, wiring of the facility, renovating the kitchen, new appliances and washer and dryer, again, to support the Monday Night Dinners, to support much-needed improvements to the Vets Hall, and ultimately to help provide the service that which you don't have is a winter shelter operation, which would be the equipment that goes along with that, the sleeping mats, bags, bedding, linens, cleaning supplies, and then funding a coordination position, probably through a contract, that individual would be responsible for getting this program up and running, the very key and difficult task of coordinating volunteers and providing logistical support to those volunteers. It's important to get this thing off and running in the right way, and that's a critical component of that. So all told, again, looking at about $280,000 to $300,000 to put into the application. As far as city commitments are concerned, we'd have to oversee the project here at the Vets Hall, provide input into the winter shelter program that would largely come from City Council, hire the winter shelter program coordinator, and assist in reporting requirements for the HEAP grant. I'm sure there are others, but those seem to be the main ones that came through my analysis. The city would assume the cost of the program coordinator following the first or second year, depending on what we submit in the application. The funds, again, must be spent by 2021. I think we'd be able to do that, no problem. The city would also be responsible up to 50% of the roof replacement costs, and we estimate that share to be about $34,700. That includes contingencies. As far as next steps are concerned, should council authorize submittal of the application, city staff would submit, with the assistance of Councilmember McPherson, application by March 19th. The SLO County Continuum of Care would review applications and select recipients. I'm not exactly sure when they will come forward with those, but I assume shortly. If the city is awarded the grant, staff would return to City Council with an agenda item to receive the grant, provide direction on logistics and the parameters for the winter shelter program, that being under what temperature on cold nights and other weather conditions it would determine how that would function, as well as citing an alternative location for nights where there's a council meeting or some other event that's been already prearranged. Those details would need to be ironed out, and also maybe consider the safe parking program, which has been brought up before, but understanding there may need to be more work done on that before moving forward. So the recommendation is to authorize staff to submit the HEAP grant application as discussed in the staff report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Appreciate that. I'll open it up with any council questions you might have of staff on this. None here?
I don't have questions, but I could answer some of the questions that were raised.
Absolutely.
If you'd like.
We'll do that. And so I'll turn to my left.
Yeah.
Councilmember Addis, and we'll have Councilmember McPherson participate in answering these questions.
I don't have questions, but thank you for the work that you've done on this. Thank you.
Yeah.
The question I had was the ongoing potential expenses. I noted that they were approximately $20,000 per year, and that would be through contractual relationship, independent contractor type.
Yeah, that's what we believe. Carrying another FTE on all the added benefits and costs to the city probably doesn't make sense, and it's largely a seasonal effort during the winter months. So I think the grant could, in theory, pay for the first year to really get this program up and running, and then the next several years would be more just keeping the program being successful, and maybe there's less effort. So we pinned it around $20,000. It could be a little bit more, a little bit less, depending.
And if I could just contribute to that, the Lions have agreed to accept responsibility at the termination of the grant for the program coordinator. But they may come to the city for a grant, some of our discretionary funding that we have. But I was looking for that commitment, and I did get that commitment from them. So I think, I don't know that the city would be on the, they're a 501c3 corporation, and they are one of the seven groups that participate in the food group. I think we would also be requesting that group of the people that participate in the food group, the organizations, might help us to oversee this project, so a sort of task force. And I should add that I have consulted all of them, and I have support letters from them and from Sharon O'Leary, who I see is still here, and also from the Los Osos Cares organization. And we do coordinate with all of the organizations in the Estero Bay area. And so, you know, Morro Bay is the only one that doesn't have a warming shelter. So there's, I think, a real, we can prove need.
Well, thank you for that additional.
One more thing. The grant is now up to $299,899.
Can you not get it to 300?
I could if I tried.
Wow, that's great. The second question I had was, given the fact that this is a multi-use facility and that there may be maybe significant number of times when there would be a need to use this facility for community functions, city council meetings, other kinds of things. Is part of what we're considering some kind of an alternative use area that could be incorporated into the overall plan?
Yes. The grant would more or less be silent on that front. They'd be paying for the program overall and then the upgrades to this facility. But in the meantime, we would need to come up with a viable alternative that could be turned to, you know, maybe multiple times a week, depending. You know, when you have a council meeting, a planning commission meeting, a WRFCAC meeting, a CFAC meeting.
Exactly.
But sometimes those wouldn't necessarily conflict because there are some afternoon meetings. And then we have weddings and other kind of activities that occur here as well that are booked in advance. So we would sort of know what we're up against. But you can't predict the weather, of course.
And right.
This year has been unseasonably wet weather. But next year could be different, so we have to have something to turn to.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you. I have no further questions. With that, I'll open it up to public comment. Anybody from the public like to speak? Those of you that stayed late, Sharon, welcome.
I'm Sharon O'Leary, resident of Morro Bay and a volunteer at the Community Resource Connections Office, which is a city service. Ever so grateful for your work. I think the data shows that the need is there. It's been a long process. Our office is going into its fifth year. So the time is right. I think the funding is right. So I think it can work, and it will be benefit now and in the future. Glad to answer any questions at all.
Thank you, Sharon.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Appreciate all that you do as well.
Thank you.
Okay, any other members for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment, bring it back, and open it up for either, well, I'll open it up for a recommendation. Yep, absolutely.
Sharon, I'd like to thank you for the many, many hours you've put in working on this and the many people that work with you. And Marlis, what would you like to take on next? I think it's a fantastic effort really here by Sharon, you and your group and so many people. And I'm really happy that there's some funding available that we can make this available to the homeless.
I would just like to thank all the people that helped me on this. Sharon O'Leary, Chuck Stoll, Linda Fidel. She went to the county meeting where we got all the grant requirements, and she's read the grant and help. And everybody has participated in helping to formulate it, to decide what we should ask for. And I want to thank our city staff that's helped us actually walk through several times. So a lot of work has already been done on this project. So thank you all to everybody. So let's just keep our fingers crossed. We should hear in April.
Great. And I'll just add my thank you to Councilmember McPherson. Heroic effort, a lot of work, and very much appreciated, a great need. And it's great to see the partnership, folks working together in that within our community to address a very significant issue that's probably going to even get more significant. So any discussion, comments?
I said my thank yous, but I'll say them again. I truly appreciate it. I think there's a lot of potential for community benefit here.
I get to move that we submit the HEAP grant.
I second.
Okay.
Motion by Councilmember McPherson, second by Councilmember Heller. Any further discussion? Not. A roll call vote. Too fast for.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding.
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Great. Thank you again for all of the work that was done, including staff, on that item. That moves us to council declaration of future agenda items. Any items to come forward in consideration?
I do.
Yes, sir.
I think that we need a steady source of revenue to upgrade and maintain our current infrastructure. This could be a sales tax increase, special assessment. I'd like to, as a future agenda item, I'd like to ask the staff within 30 days to bring back to the council a menu of options that will generate a substantial and sustainable revenue source to repair the city's infrastructure.
I'm just thinking out loud. Are you thinking about a capital plan?
Yes, I'm thinking about.
Much like the water.
Citizens are volunteering to pay a more higher sales tax.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I know.
Rigmore is anyway.
No, I was just trying to liken it to the one water plan and the master plan that was done. Not the master plan, but the capital improvement plan. Are you looking?
I'm not looking for the plan so much as.
The revenues.
Shall we increase the revenue source?
I see.
Should we raise a sales tax, special assessment? How much do you think we'll need?
Gotcha.
What are our options to raise substantial amount of revenue?
Perfect. And I'm totally aligned with you, and I absolutely concur. Let me offer this up. If you recall from the special session that we had on the, it was the mid-year report, and then the special session on goals, we received a revenue potential analysis from our finance director, which included a large laundry list of items, including just what you said, certain tax issues and other things, but literally outlined all the potential sources of revenue for the city. And could I broaden it to suggest that since we're moving into our budget planning process, that we have consider a special session, educational session on revenue opportunities that really is kind of based upon that initial report that we had, which was very comprehensive. Would that be?
That sounds way better than what I said.
Yeah, but I'm tracking exactly with you because I think it's extremely important. So I support that. It may not happen quite within 30 days, but it'll be very comprehensive, I believe. And so if you'd be okay with that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's part of a discussion for city goals and budgeting because we know that our number one objective is increasing revenue. So we do have to look at all of the various ways that we could do that. So I would see it as part of that process. I'd be curious to know if Scott has to say about it.
Yeah, a dedicated study session would be a great idea. Just got word from my finance director we might need a little bit more time than 30 days because we want to do it right for you guys.
I know.
Sorry. Budget development and all. But we'll collaborate on when we can do that and then give an update to council because we think this is, of all the things we heard in the goals discussion, that was resounding yes from everybody. So we'll figure out when we can bring that back and then have a dedicated study session for that.
Thanks, and thanks for bringing that up. That's a good
idea.
She
said that was okay.
Yeah, if you get a chance, review that list. It's very comprehensive, and it's a good springboard to the discussion. So, seeing no others, with that, I'll move for adjournment, and the next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, March 26, 2019, 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall, located at 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. Thank you and good evening.
Friends.
Yeah. The tri-presentation.
Yeah.